Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to open it and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in my tub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Babette Josephs about the right-wing assault on women's reproductive rights, on this insane budget, workmen's the unemployment compensation, all of the right-wing attacks that are going on right now here in our state house. It is absolutely amazing. And, you know, it was just about a week and a half ago that the news was reporting that the craziness has just, you know, blown over Pennsylvania. Personally, I kind of think, and this is what I talked about back then, is that we should be ready for the attacks as they move forward, because I think that was kind of the bell that we all should have heard. I heard it, but we should all heard it and been looking for the insanity, because ever since then, it's been nothing but craziness. So it'll be interesting to talk about the assault that went on today, especially on women's reproductive rights, and your calls to her, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, we're going to talk to a former Obama advisor, David Morey. He's also an award-winning author of The Underdog Advantage. He's also the vice chairman of Core Strategy Group. I'm going to talk about, since Bin Laden's gone, is this a reason that we reelect Obama? Personally, no, that's not the only reason. Hopefully he now takes some of that and turns that into a little swagger in his step, a little political capital, if you will, and starts imposing what it is that he sees as the vision of this country. Moving forward, being that guy that isn't going to delegate. Delegators don't win. You need somebody who's got a clear vision, who's going to stand up and fight. And I'm hoping from this point forward that we see Obama do some of that. In the third hour, we're going to talk to the Reverend Chuck Curry about the president's speech today on immigration down in El Paso. That should be an interesting conversation as well as we talk. Again, I think immigration is going to be a big issue coming from now until the election. Hopefully something gets done. And if it does get done, stop and think about all the things that have been done during the Obama years. Now, I'm as angry with him as probably anyone can be, and still calls himself a supporter. I'm really furious about some of the labor things that he let slip by. But he did get something of health care done that in 100 years they haven't been able to get done. He did do a lot of the things he said he was going to do. Immigration reform would be another huge feather in his cap. Again, but for me, it's got to come back down to you got to protect and you got to help the working people of this country. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you've got something on your mind, question, comment, you got to take issue with something, that's the number to call. Today, the budgets came out. Pat Toomey has his proposal, and it's kind of Ryan Light, if you will. He claims it's going to balance the budget in 9 years, And it's not going to go after the radical changes of destroying Medicare and Social Security on its face. Now, look, this guy's been somebody who all along has advocated for the destruction of Medicare and Social Security. Don't be lulled into believing that he has anything less on his mind. It's just not right now. The big prize for them right now across the board, and we've been talking about this for a while, is Medicaid. And what they're going to do, and this is what his plan is to basically throw it on to the states and say, here's a block grant. Do something with it. And we all know what happens when they end up giving block grants. It really very rarely ever does what it's supposed to do, and the money very rarely ever goes where it's supposed to go. But again, that's one of their key little fixes. Once they throw that into the mix, they know that they can then cause chaos on the local levels. And you look at this local budget that the Republicans came out with in answer to Corbett's budget, and look, we knew what it was going to be. It's basically pitting the poor and the elderly against college kids. It's pitting high school kids against college kids. It's this trade-off. It's this separating, this dividing that they're masterful of. And again, right, I watched the news conference today, and all they could talk about was the Office of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse. There's this big office, big shiny platinum door with gold trim and, the silver plate on the door as well. And all this precious metal all over this big, beautiful, massive, heavy door. And behind it, a big, fiery pit where you've got, you got overpaid state workers just shoveling money into a big, fiery pit. That was basically the press conference today. There's all this waste, fraud, and abuse out there. Yet none of them could come up with one thing other than we know it's out there. And everybody agrees it's out there. Well, name one thing. Well, it's out there. We know. It's kind of like Rumsfeld when he was asked where the weapons of mass destruction were. Well, north, south, east, and west. That's where they are. Right? North, south, east, west. Got to be there, right there with the waste, fraud, and abuse. Of course. Of course. And nobody bothers to ask why. Why they don't have anything. And I'll tell you why they don't have anything. It's not there. I mean, they've been hatcheting these budgets for years. They've been going at and picking and picking and picking and blaming this mythical figure that's out there. This mythical welfare queen, and it's all the same rhetoric. It's all the same thing to get people going, well, there's those poor people cheating the system again. Just like they're trying to do with unemployment compensation. Well, those people are lazy. They don't want to work like you. So they're going to collect that generous, that overly generous unemployment compensation, which averages about $300 a week. I don't know about you, but I can't live on $300 a week. Maybe that makes me an elitist. I don't know. But I can't live. I can't feed my family, pay my mortgage. I can't do that. Not on $300 a week. So I'm amazed that there are people who can after losing a job that paid twice that. That's what gets me. And what they want, what Scott Perry and this destructive bill, House Bill 916 wants to do, is cut that $300 even further back, make it harder for people to get the unemployment compensation that they paid for, and then throw a whole bunch of other hoops and barriers and you name it in the way so that they can take and take and take. I mean, at some point, when does it become apparent? At what point does it become apparent to the working people of this state that the Republicans are not your friends? When does it become apparent that cutting taxes at all costs without asking which taxes are we talking about is a failed policy? I mean, help me here because I'm not getting it. Look, I don't like paying taxes any more than anybody else. But at the end of the day, when you're talking about ending kindergarten programs, when you're talking about increasing class sizes, when you're talking about doing away with extracurricular activities at the school level, I got a problem with that. When you're talking about taking away resources and taking away help from folks who are disabled and need that help and rely on it and depend on it and can't exist without it, I got a problem with that. But that's exactly what we're talking about doing. And they couch it in such happy, oh, well, it's just waste, fraud, and abuse. All we need to do is go to that magic door and find that room. And there's all, we could just fire those overpaid, lazy, wait a minute, that frame doesn't work, does it? Overpaid and lazy, because they are doing a good job of shoveling all that money into that fiery pit. Because if they were lazy, there wouldn't be any money going into it. Better rethink that one. But at the end of it, man, these budgets that they're putting out, they are absolutely destructive to you and me. Now, they're very good for the campaign contributors. They're very good for the Koch brothers, very good for the Pete Petersons of the world, very good for the Walmart family, very good for the Forbes 400. Good for them, man. In fact, great for them. We're not asking them to do anything. We're asking for shared sacrifice, except from the people who have something to share. It reminds me of when I was a kid. You know, as I've said, you probably know, I grew up in a housing project. And what always amazed me when I think back of the years that I lived there is that the people who lived in the projects stole from each other. My mother would go grocery shopping, and we would leave the house, and somebody would break into the house and steal the food. And the next day you would see people in the neighborhood, somebody in the neighborhood eating your food. We were stealing from each other. They never bothered to go a mile down the road to where the people actually had money and actually had food. They never went after them. They ended up screwing each other. And I always wonder why that is, that we in the working class only look at eating each other, only work at destroying each other, instead of looking to the people who have something to share, have something to sacrifice, have something that we don't. And we never ask them to say, hey, you know what, times are tough, shared sacrifice, time for you to pitch in. I'm not getting it, Jake. I just don't get it.
I guess that's human nature. I guess jealousy is maybe a word for it. I've seen that in the workplace. I've seen that in society. And you're right. You would think that instead of going after someone who's in the same plight as you, you would think that they would want to rectify that situation and perhaps go after the people who created the situation.
You know, I hear shared sacrifice one more time, I'm going to scream. Because there's no sharing of this sacrifice. This sacrifice is put squarely on the shoulders of those least able to shoulder it. The people who are least able to carry this burden forward, they're the folks who are the ones who are being attacked. And look, the Republicans ran in November on jobs. I defy anyone to call me 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, and explain to me that the Republican Party ran on anything other than that they were going to be the paycheck party. They were going to be the jobs party. And then, do me a favor, when you have that, tell me exactly what they've done since then to create jobs. Because all I see is divisiveness. All I see is a destruction of everything the working class has fought for the last century. States going after collective bargaining rights, states going after unemployment compensation, states going after workmen's compensation, states going after, you name it. Women's rights, gay rights, right down the line. Where are the jobs? But it's about their agenda. It's about their blind faith ideology. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk with State Representative Babette Josephs about the latest right-wing assault here in Pennsylvania on women's reproductive rights. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this. I'm gonna get it.
to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 390 Blue Cross Blue Shield workers in the Buffalo, New York area are locked out of their jobs despite being willing to work. Today, hundreds of members of the Office of Professional Employees International Union, Local 212 in Buffalo, New York, are protesting the lockout by Health Now New York Incorporated, doing business as Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York. Dina Fox, business representative of OPEIU Local 212, says the company refused to agree on a fair contract as the union tried to negotiate more job security on April 25th.
Before we got out of bargaining on that night, our membership received robocalls from their employer telling them not to report for work. This is not a strike. This is a lockout. The workers did not come together and say, we don't want to work. The workers are saying, we want to work if we want a fair collective bargaining agreement.
Fox says 164 positions have been lost at Buffalo's Blue Cross Blue Shield facility in the past 4 years. With jobs urgently needed across America, the union is trying to bring jobs back while the company insists on total outsourcing freedom. Fox says these workers are just middle-class Americans trying to provide for their families.
These are everyday, day-to-day folks trying to pay their bills, make a living, and make sure they can provide for their families.
May 13th is the soonest the company will talk with the union about settling a new contract. One aspect of the Affordable Health Care Act is drawing many more participants than expected. Jesse Russell reports.
After the Affordable Care Act was signed into law, the Health and Human Services Department estimated that in 2011, 1.2 million young adults would seek extended coverage under their parents' health plans. According to Kaiser Health News, the number of individuals under the age of 26 staying on their parents' plans will likely be much higher than the original estimate. Early numbers for this year show that United Healthcare, Blue Shield, Healthcare Services Corporation, Highmark, Kaiser Permanente, and WellPoint combined have all added more than 650,000 young adults to their rolls. For WellPoint alone, the addition made up one-third of the insurer's growth during the first quarter of 2011. Adult children under the age of 26, no matter if they live at home or can be declared as dependents, must be allowed to stay on their parents' health plans according to the law. If the young adult takes a job where their employer offers coverage, the parents' coverage can be waived. However, nearly 30% of those in their 20s are uninsured in the United States.
This newscast made possible by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Help to turn America blue. Now, let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show.
This is the time.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You know, it is an assault across this country. The Republicans don't have a vision of where they're going to move this country with regards to the economy or jobs, so they go back to what they know. They know divisive issues. They know that they can attack workers. They know that they can attack gays. They know that they can attack women's rights. It's good politics for them. It's not good governance, but it's good politics for them. And Pennsylvania, no different. I don't care what the Tribune Review says that Pennsylvania missed the crazy conservative wave. It's here, and it's here to stay. That's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Babette Joseph to come talk to us. Today, I guess, in the House, there was an assault on women's reproductive rights. And again, just another one of these radical moves by the majority party. Representative Josephs, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm very honored to be here.
I appreciate your time. You know, look at these assaults going across the board, and it's hard to look at it and say that it's not a centralized plan coming out of one of these little think tanks funded by the big Koch brothers or by the billionaire class.
Oh, it's a national playbook.
So let's talk.
There's no doubt in my mind.
No doubt in my mind either. But let's talk about what went on today. I guess they were pushing through,
Well, we had a horrible situation here with which the women's movement, the pro-choice movement, has been aware of for almost 40 years, 39 years, where this so-called doctor was basically abusing women and murdering live births, people, babies who were born alive.
Right.
And so the anti-choice movement, the people who want to see all of this made illegal, if not illegal, inaccessible, seized on that to try and close all the abortion providers.
And we're talking about the Gosnell guy in Philadelphia.
Gosnell, yes.
You know, when that came out, you knew, you had to know that this was going to happen. You had to know where all this was going to take us. And I had to ask, why was it allowed to go on for so long? How did we miss this?
I cannot really answer that question. It's a mystery to me on many levels. The simple answer is the health department, which was notified of this back, as I said, 39, 40 years ago, under many, many governors for different reasons, supposedly, simply failed to do its job. And we knew there was a problem. We knew it back in 1972 when a busload or two of teenage girls came from Chicago to undergo an experimental series of abortions, and where did they end up in Philadelphia? In Gosnell's clinic, because he already had a reputation of not being professional, and worse.
Well, let's talk about House Bill 574. I guess they're calling it the Healthcare Facilities Act. Explain this to me.
Well, it's an attempt to put the abortion providers under strictures that are set up for places that do actual surgery. So that in other states, it has shut down all the abortion providers. And, of course, in situations like that, you get women who are desperate, who are poor, who are young, who are unsophisticated, going to people like Gosnell, and the end result, I believe, of this bill would to make Gosnell's clinic the standard of care in this state, because there would be nothing left but these illegal, really horrible places.
Basically taking us back 50 years.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, I remember when the Roe versus Wade thing was in the news back when I was a kid. And,
right.
You know, having a discussion with my mother, who actually knew someone who had one of these backroom abortions in Kentucky, and she ended up dying from it because of the infection that she got, and afraid to go to the doctor and afraid to tell anybody, and it just got so bad that it ended up costing her life. And I got to be honest, I'm not a big proponent of abortion. I wish it was something that didn't have to be, but as the father of two young girls, I don't want their choices to be a back room somewhere in Kentucky, or worse.
Well, the pro-choice movement is not a big fan either. That's why it was interesting. I had a talk with our district attorney, who played a very important part in this debate today and going forward, because this all came out of a grand jury, and he wrote a letter. A grand jury report. He wrote a letter to our leaders, which got circulated every place, that said the grand jury did not recommend this kind of solution, which is no solution, which is worse. The grand jury simply demanded that the health department do its job. But interestingly enough, when I went to talk to him about what happened way back 40 years ago, he was astounded. He thought it was the other side trying to stop them. Well, in my opinion, the other side has no interest in women's health. We do. And the option has to be there, or women die, or become infertile, or end up with serious injuries. That is not acceptable.
Let me ask you something about else about this Health Care Facilities Act. You know, my father-in-law, he just had skin cancer surgery in the doctor's office. When I was reading through some of this, I was wondering if this could be used, because as I understand this act, there are certain requirements to do any in-office or any type of surgical procedure outside of a hospital. If I'm not right, please let me know. But you know, he had this procedure done in a office setting, which you know was much more efficient, much more cost effective. Yet I'm looking at this going, is that something that will be taken away in the future?
Well, we don't think so, and we're not looking forward to something like that happening because, as you say, these ambulatory care centers, including dental offices, I just had dental surgery in an office. I think the thing we have to keep in mind when we discuss surgical abortion is that once you are pregnant, the very safest thing you can do for yourself is have a medically safe legal abortion. The worst thing you can do is end up in a situation like Gosnell.
Yeah.
In between is actually having the baby. It is more dangerous than having a legal abortion. So this is the procedure which is extraordinarily safe. And to put it into a category where the surgery that's being done is pathology, lasering people's teeth or taking cancer, that's not correct. That is not right. It doesn't protect anybody. And the end result is that there will be no legitimate providers.
Well, the bill is House Bill 574. If you want more information, you can go to our website. We'll get the actual language up for you to read. And then you can contact your representatives. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Pennsylvania State Representative Babette Josephs. Another part of this right-wing assault is on education. Sex education being part of it, but education in general. We're looking at, you know, $1 billion cut in K-12 education, 56% to higher education, and a whole bunch of other stuff that the governor is slashing, all the while talking that he wants to create this new lottery ticket program where maybe someone gets a voucher to nowhere.
To nowhere, I like that.
I'm curious, you know, it's like a lottery ticket. If you got the winning ticket, it's only a winning ticket if someone's going to validate it.
That's right. And the thing is, I think the public doesn't understand because of the work that you talked about the Koch brothers and these types of people do. They think if they have a voucher in their hand that, A, it's going to be enough to cover any tuition, which is not true, and, B, that when they approach a school, the school has to take them. That's not true either. What I think is going to happen is that most of these private schools or any school that offers tuition, if we had a voucher system, you would see tuition creep. And pretty soon these tuitions would be the amount of the voucher. But the thing that's really important about Pennsylvania, Rick, is we never pulled back our commitment over the last 8 years, 9 years, to early childhood education. We tried to save everybody, every child, not just the few who can grab the vouchers. And as a result of resourcing kindergartens, full-day kindergartens, early childhood learning, our scores in every grade that's been tested have been going up, and we're the only state in the country where that's true.
That's because we've invested in the future.
That's right.
And I look at my kids, and they are a living testament to that. We were able to, we have the resources to send them to quality pre-K programs, and the school district has a full-day kindergarten, and they are really much better off than I was at that age, and that most of our friends whose children are that age have done. My 5-year-old reads at a level that I could never have imagined when I was five.
Exactly.
Because we're introducing this and we're investing.
And we've had job growth as well, because when you come right down to it, the the corporations and the businesses complain about taxes and regulations, but what they really want is an educated workforce, and that's what we're producing. If we keep on the way we're going, we will be competitive in the 21st century. If we go the way the governor and the Republicans do want us to go, we will be a backwater state.
We're going to be Mississippi.
Worse.
Yeah, well, you can't get much. Mississippi's the last state educationally, as far as I know.
We'll be Somali.
Oh, geez.
Somali. I mean, we will be nowhere. We will be. And it's so frustrating, Rick, because we can see what helps. We had an 8-year experiment, and we succeeded. We didn't get to where we want to go. We didn't get all the kids that need to be. I have a piece of legislation that will concentrate on the 144 failing schools that have been identified and resource them much more highly. That's the way we ought to be going.
Well, that was my next question, because the governor, he came out in his speech in front of the billionaire people there in D.C. with Scott Walker and said that, and I'll read the article, Corbett blamed decades-old social changes for the deteriorating state of public schools. Welfare became a generational exception, Corbett argued, as people became reliant on government handouts and ceased to be self-reliant. He says, we held the weak captive with our pity. And he said that we only changing the culture of public education would be enough to reverse this trend, which is why he says that these vouchers for those handfuls of schools is the way to go. So basically we're going to destroy all of public education for these handful.
Look, that's exactly right, and that's not the way we need to go. This is how I think of it, Rick. There's three legs that the middle class is on. One is education, one is the labor movement, and the other is small business entrepreneurship. He's after the unions, he's after education, and we'll see a tax on small businesses. We already have the health exchanges. This is really, I think, an attempt by the Republican elite to make sure fewer people get to the middle class, and those of us who are about ready to fall out faster.
You know, and again, you know, I go back to this. What's the incentive of that? I mean, I really don't understand what the point of destroying the middle class, which is what made this country great, what that gets them.
Well, distracts, certainly, as you've suggested, from the fact that they have no plan.
Well, there's a point, yes.
And I think it's really where many people want to go. They think that if they want some sort of theocracy, an autocracy, I'm not saying the words right, but, you know, they think that business leaders are the ones who were born rich and stayed rich that ought to run everything. I happen to disagree rather strongly, and I think most of the people in this state and this country do as well.
Yeah, I'm right there. What do we do on these bills, though? What do you suggest for our listeners? How do we stop this attack?
Oh, lots and lots of things. Make sure, as you just said, that the people who represent you in Harrisburg know how you feel. It's not hard to find out who they are on many, many websites. Very easy. You can find on ours. There's lots of groups who will let you know. Join organizations who are fighting these. If you can't afford the money, volunteer for them. Come to demonstrations. Come to rallies. Write letters to the newspapers. I mean, this is how we fight this with the people, and the people are perfectly well able to do this. All you have to do is ask them, I think, and that's what I'm doing now.
Yep. Two quick things before we wrap this up. I've been advocating for the college kids, once school is out, to come to the Capitol with a sleeping bag and a toothbrush en masse. And do what we saw in Wisconsin when we went to Wisconsin to see the folks taking over their capital. I've been advocating for the kids to come here and do that.
That would be great.
Can we enlist your support?
Absolutely.
All right. And the other thing is House Bill 916, which I think is just atrocious and another right-wing slap in the face to working people, this Scott Perry bill to basically destroy unemployment compensation.
Yes.
Where are you at on this?
Well, I'm certainly not for it, and I think it's going to provoke an enormous backlash. I think these Republicans have, in this state at least, made some bad mistakes. And they're the kinds of bills we're talking about now. I don't think their own constituents are going to be able to stomach much of this.
I agree with you. And you know the reason why? I was at a Tea Party rally right at the beginning of the whole Tea Party thing and the whole uprising. And the five, six guys that were there screaming about all the things that they hated were all collecting unemployment, all with their signs, smaller government, less spending. And I said, I can cut spending right now. All these guys, no more unemployment.
The leading advocate in this legislature, who I think you know is who he is, was entirely educated, so far as I can see from Googling him, by the public. So what is he complaining about?
Excellent point. Representative Josephs, it's always great talking to you. I appreciate your time. Would love to have you back again.
I would love to come. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
This is why we fight, why we lie away. This is why we fight.
Finally, radio for the rest of us. Rick Smith.
If you were being hustled to buy an insurance policy, would you trust a salesman who said, "Let's go to the bar, have a couple of drinks, and talk it over"? As we say in Texas, never sign nothing by neon. Be careful then, because Representative Paul Ryan is coming at you, winking, blinking, and grinning, hoping to sell you on his Medicare privatization plan. Chair of the House Budget Committee, Ryan and all but four of his Republican colleagues voted to replace Medicare with this deal. The clincher in his sales pitch is that folks over 65, quote, would be enrolled in the same kind of health care program that we members of Congress get. Wow, you might think, Congress critters always give themselves the best, so where do I sign? Think again. Step out of the neon and check the fine print, and you'll find that Ryan's plan is nothing but a political hustle. In other words, he and his Republican cohorts are lying. Note that he says we would get the same kind of coverage that they enjoy. That's like saying that someone with an old clunker has the same kind of transportation as a rich guy driving a new Cadillac. Both have cars. Here's the scam in Ryan's scheme. While the plan that Congress gives itself and the plan it wants you to buy are both based on the government paying a share of each individual's annual insurance premium, there's a huge gap between the share the government pays for them and the share it would pay for us. Members of Congress only pay about 25% of the cost of their insurance, but Ryan's plan would require elderly Americans to shell out nearly 70% of the cost of their insurance. And very few elderly folks get a fat congressional salary to help them buy insurance. This is Jim Hightower saying, the GOP's privatization hustle would cost each of us more than twice what we now pay under Medicare. Don't buy their lies, and don't sign on to Representative Ryan's raw deal.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Last night on The Daily Show, there was, and have you ever heard of this Keira Knightley? She was in this Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever heard of her. But she she was talking to Stewart on The Daily Show, and she said that she was disturbed about something about our former Senator Rick Santorum. Mm-hmm. She said she Googled Santorum, and she said she, quote, "I feel like my innocence has been taken away." So I encourage everyone, go Google Santorum. That's why he's not going to be president.
She was talking about one of Santorum's stupid comments about gays.
No, she wasn't.
I believe she was.
No, she wasn't.
Okay.
She was talking about what the word Santorum now is synonymous with. Google it, you'll find out. Anyway.
I have to reread the article.
Don't read the article, just do it. Just Google Santorum.
Okay.
Do your, and then maybe you'll lose your innocence. Anyway.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. Anyway, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. And here's the thing. I'm agreeing with the Republican right now. I absolutely am. You know, right after bin Laden was killed, Walter Jones, a Republican from North Carolina, came out and said, it's time to declare victory and get out of Afghanistan. And I agreed. We talked about this when he said it last time, and I absolutely agree that now is the time to have that ticker tape parade, bring everybody home, you know, throw the rice, have a bunch of babies, move forward. Start taking the money that we're throwing into that sand pit, making big rocks smaller, and actually solve our debt problems, maybe. Maybe provide health care for those people coming back from those places. You know, maybe some ideas like that. Make sure that their families are taken care of. Maybe make sure that they're not thrown out of their homes. Because we've seen reports recently of service people who, while they're in combat, their families are being booted out of their homes and foreclosed upon, even though it's supposedly against the law. But they're still getting away with it. And that's one of those things that just drives me nuts. And maybe take some of that money. And it's a lot of money that we're throwing over to that sand pit. And take some of that money and begin to invest in alternative energy. I mean, you look at the fact that we're paying almost $4 a gallon for gas. When does it become the squeal point? When do we wake up as a society and say, you know what, it's not going back down to 98 cents a gallon again. Not in my lifetime. It's probably never going to go back down to $2 a gallon. They've got us used to paying 2.50, 3, 4. It's probably never going to go under 3 again because they've got us used to paying it. And what's interesting is people are saying, you know what? It's not the president's fault. It's not his fault. It's the oil company's fault. In fact, 89% in a recent poll, this Opinion Research Corporation poll, 89% believe the oil companies deserve a great deal or some of the blame. Because the gas prices are so high, 90% of people believe that Wall Street speculators are to blame. 90%. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Really, this is really a far limb. As divided of a country as we are, as splintered and as broken up into factions as we are, to use a Madison term, into factions as we are, to get 90% of the people to go Wall Street is pretty telling. And I think it's one of these duh moments. The president's not out there doing anything to raise gas prices. It's the profiteers. And look, I would say if ExxonMobil were losing money and Shell and BP and ConocoPhillips, if they were all losing money or, you know, break even, I'd say, you know what, maybe it's not their fault. But they're making billions. I think what ExxonMobil, over $11 billion in the first 3 months of this year. It's time, folks. It's time to start looking for something else. So we take some of that money that we're throwing into the sand pit, and we put it into other technology, which is why I'm encouraged by the Reuters report that came out today saying that governments approved on Monday a UN report projecting that renewable energies such as solar, wind, hydropower could leap to supply almost 80% of the world's demand for energy by 2050. And they added a caveat with the right policies. And you look at what's going on in D.C. right now. You look at what the Republicans are doing. They're taking us right back to 1980. We were at that crossroads in 1980 where we could have started going down the road towards renewable energy, solar, wind, all of that, geothermal, beginning to perfect that technology. Because it was born here. And it could have grown up here, but it didn't. 1980, we made the wrong choice. And you put Ronald Reagan in the White House, who stripped the solar panels off the White House and chucked them, went back to good old-fashioned oil. And then for the next 30 years, your energy policy was the George Bush. We need an energy policy that encourages consumption. And that was our energy policy. Consume more. Because if we consume more, they'll produce more, and it'll be cheaper somehow. But it's a finite resource, you dimwits. That doesn't matter. It's a good frame. You know, it's a good supply and demand. If you make more stuff, there's more of it available, and people will pay lower prices. But not on a finite resource. Never mind. What I'm saying is this is why we're putting solar panels on my house. You know, and we're going to be doing that here in the coming weeks, which I'm excited about. I think it's, you know, it's about time that we start doing this on a national scale like the Germans did, for instance. When they started by going, you know what, homeowners, we're going to give you like a 1.5% loan over 10 years, put panels on your house, sell back whatever it is you create at 7 times the going rate, pay the loan off. They don't have to upgrade the energy grid. Look, we got some serious grid problems in this country. I don't know if you know that. We've got infrastructural problems in this country that are just mind-blowing. And costly. We're trillions of dollars behind. And we're not catching up anytime soon. Which is why I always thought that this downturn, Jake, would have been a perfect opportunity to invest in that infrastructure to jumpstart the economy and get people back to work. Instead, no. We had to appease the Republicans and give tax cuts to the wealthy folk.
And I can still remember. I still remember those. Do you remember those wonderful commercials of the Ronald Reagan? Do you remember that? It's dawn in America.
Yeah.
And then we could go back to that whole sick, sorry scenario where I truly do believe that they were involved in the non-release of hostages, which probably cost Jimmy Carter his presidency.
Too coincidental for me.
No, I mean, it was too coincidental.
The second the man's hand touched the Bible, they released him, and they couldn't release him fast enough.
Well, there's now, you know, 30 years later where some people can talk and not be worried about having somebody coming after him. They're saying, hey, you know, the Reagan administration behind the scenes actually did that, negotiated with Khomeini.
Don't forget that George H.W. Bush was former head of the CIA. Don't forget that. That's the key. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Ullman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
My name is Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We're a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her.
Yeah, I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we gotta do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big John, Big John, Big Bad John.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Interesting story coming out of Louisiana. This Republican, John Labruzzo. Again, you know, you look at this stuff and it seems like it's 100 years ago. But his grand plan, if you're a poor woman in Louisiana, his big plan is to make sure that you never have children. That's his goal. He says that the women, those women who are on welfare, the generational welfare women, we should give them money to be sterilized. And this is an idea that comes up every once in a while, but now you've got another one that's come out with this, another state legislator in Louisiana. But here's the thing. On one end of the spectrum, he's saying, well, we need to make sure that they're sterilized. But people who are doing pretty well, the very wealthy, the college-educated, higher-income people, we need to give them tax incentives to have more children. Stop and think about that for a while. Anyway, he says that we're going to give women about $1,000 to be sterilized. It's going to be, you know, purely voluntary, of course, to start. And my question is, you know, at what point does it no longer become voluntary? At what point does it no longer become something that you decide over? Where now the government's going to say, in order to get any assistance, you have to be sterilized so that we can be sure that you're not going to cause more problems. Or, even worse yet, we go back to when corporations had the say and could say, well, we're not going to hire you until you do this. That's really, to me, a scary, scary thing. And what's interesting is it's the same people who keep talking about we want freedom and, you know, need liberty. These are the people who are wanting to take those rights away. I'm just amused by the hypocrisy. And these are the people who don't want to educate. You know, sterilization is an extreme form of birth control, really a very extreme form. Why don't we start with losing this bizarre thought that abstinence-only education is the way to go? I mean, Sarah Palin and her daughter, nothing against them. My mother was a teenage mother. You know, thank goodness she was there. But at the end of the day, isn't education about how to protect themselves, maybe having actual conversations with your children, isn't that the way to go? Instead of burying heads in the sand and saying, oh, I don't know anything about it.
Well, the irony is, Rick, he's the kind of guy that would be adamantly opposed to Planned Parenthood, which provides safe alternatives to sterilization, provides all kinds of good things for women, which prevent unwanted pregnancies.
You mean that Planned Parenthood who does 90% of their stuff doing abortions?
Yes.
Killing those little baby Americans?
They just don't let the facts get in the way, do they?
Well, it's around 2 to 3%. And look, you know, I am, you know, having grown up Catholic, I'm not someone who's in favor of abortion. I'm not. One, it's not a call I'm ever going to have to make. I do believe this is between a woman and her doctor. I do believe it's between the woman and her maker. That's her decision. And all of this, well, what about the man's rights? Sorry, you're not the one whose body's ravaged by childbirth. You're not the one who's going to have to risk death. Sorry, when you're willing to have it shoot out your back hole, backside, then let's talk. But until then, I'm of the mindset that I don't really have a voice in this. But, you know, like I've said, I've got two daughters, and hopefully they never have to be put in this situation. And hopefully they make the right decisions, and hopefully that when their growing years happen, they protect themselves. But in the event that something does happen, I want them to be safe. I won't be happy, but I want them to be safe. That's the end of this. And that's where, you know, again, you know, as my grandfather, I said, don't worry about me, worry about yourself. We've all got our problems. Michigan, another insane piece of legislation out of Michigan. It just never ends. I mean, this onslaught of bizarre happenings just never ends. The Michigan House has now approved an amendment to their education budget, penalizing state universities and colleges for offering domestic partners who are same-sex couples and unmarried, of course. Now, in Michigan, same-sex couples can't be married, so I don't know how the whole unmarried part is going to work. But, you know, if they offer any benefits, anything, the same-sex couples, they're going to lose 5% of their budget. 5% whacked right off the top. And I got to be honest, you know, you look at this, it seems kind of dumb to me, and it seems punitive. But I guess that's what it's supposed to be. And you look at why the law students, I think it was at Michigan University, who walked out of their graduation and turned their backs on the speaker who is advocating this stuff. Amazing stuff. Also, a new report has come out saying that Uncle Sam is not as cheap as the private sector when it comes to women's wages. You know, you look at this, and again, you know, the whole idea that women make less than men for doing the exact same job in a union environment is something foreign. In a union environment, doesn't exist. Where you have a collective bargaining agreement, it doesn't matter, you know, if it's a man, woman, child, you know, Martian, whatever the job is, that's what it pays. But you get into these private sector jobs, especially into the women, and I hate saying it that way, into the jobs that women generally do, and there's a whole bunch of really bizarre things that go on. And I look at the reality being that when my wife was managing a billing office, when she was managing this billing office, it was all women, and they were all making different wages, and they couldn't tell each other what they were making. And if they did, they were fired. And I've always been amused and amazed and really just taken back at the level of abuse that American workers are allowing themselves to be put under. It's like I've said, you know, the American workforce is suffering from Stockholm syndrome.
Now think of the prejudice that management can get away with and hide. It is amazing. If I can make a comment on equal wages. When I actually, my workplace, when I first started, they actually had, now technically they weren't, but they used to say there were three or four rates. They were all rated with letters. And the three or four lowest rates were all women's jobs. And women didn't take a job above a certain level. Now that changed, then some of them, you know, over time it changed. But originally when I first started, now this is a while ago.
Dinosaurs roamed. Yeah, I know.
What I'm saying is, Rick, what I'm trying to say here, I'll get to the point.
30 seconds.
It evolved. It wasn't always that way. Even in union facilities, it wasn't always, you know.
Well,
women made the same, but
thanks again for contradicting
me. Well,
my experience.
Well, I'm a little older than you, yeah. You know, just
a
year or two.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Sing about the unions again. They have all died.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 390 Blue Cross Blue Shield workers in the Buffalo, New York area are locked out of their jobs despite being willing to work. Today, hundreds of members of the Office of Professional Employees International Union, Local 212 in Buffalo, New York, are protesting the lockout by Health Now New York Incorporated, doing business as Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York. Dina Fox, business representative of OPEIU Local 212, says the company refused to agree on a fair contract as the union tried to negotiate more job security. On April 25th.
Before we got out of bargaining on that night, our membership received robocalls from their employer telling them not to report for work. This is not a strike. This is a lockout. The workers did not come together and say, we don't want to work. The workers are saying, we want to work and we want a fair collective bargaining agreement.
Fox says 164 positions have been lost at Buffalo's Blue Cross Blue Shield facility in the past 4 years. With jobs urgently needed across America, the union is trying to bring jobs back while the company insists on total outsourcing freedom. Fox says these workers are just middle-class Americans trying to provide for their families.
These are everyday, day-to-day folks trying to pay their bills, make a living, and make sure they can provide for their families.
May 13th is the soonest the company will talk with the union about settling a new contract. One aspect of the Affordable Health Care Act is drawing many more participants than expected. Jesse Russell reports.
After the Affordable Care Act was signed into law, the Health and Human Services Department estimated that in 2011, 1.2 million young adults would seek extended coverage under their parents' health plans. According to Kaiser Health News, the number of individuals under the age of 26 staying on their parents' plans will likely be much higher than the original estimate. Early numbers for this year show that United Healthcare, Blue Shield, Healthcare Services Corporation, Highmark, Kaiser Permanente, and WellPoint combined have all added more than 650,000 young adults to their roles. For WellPoint alone, the addition made up one-third of the insurer's growth during the first quarter of 2011. Adult children under the age of 26, no matter if they live at home or can be declared as dependents, must be allowed to stay on their parents' health plans according to the law. If the young adult takes a job where their employer offers coverage, the parents' coverage can be waived. However, nearly 30% of those in their 20s are uninsured in the United States.
This newscast made possible by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Commanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, now that they've taken out Bin Laden, now I'm hoping this administration comes out and with a little more swagger, maybe a little more campaign Obama, maybe grow a set. We haven't seen a very strong leader in this president to this point, in my opinion. Maybe this is going to be that moment that gets him back with some political capital. I'm hoping that to be the case. But the question then becomes, is it enough that Obama was able to do what George Bush was not, and that is find and kill Osama bin Laden? That's why I've asked former Obama advisor David Morey, who's also an award-winning author of The Underdog Advantage and a vice chairman of Core Strategy Group, to come talk to us a little bit about this. He's also got one of the best domain names, playoffense.com. David, thanks for taking time for me.
Rick, good evening.
I look at this, and one of the things that this, I think, does is it gives a Democratic president the power in foreign policy that Republicans have tried to corner for themselves.
Well, I think it's well said. I agree with your proposition. We studied and learned and teach CEOs and run political campaigns based on what we call the insurgent model, the underdog model. You know, the president ordered a very insurgent-like maneuver. I mean, an incumbent, you know, bureaucratic, big, always playing defense, you know, looking inside themselves, would have, you know, dropped big bombs on Abbottabad. You know, but the SEALs really helped to create an insurgent strategy and execution and success, and President Obama deserves tremendous credit for that. But he's got to drive the insurgent presidency, the insurgent CEO, the insurgent leader model. He's got to play offense on the issues you described. I think this is just, you know, it can be a turning point for his administration, but only if that sort of change comes inside out, you know, only if they start getting confident and playing offense on some of the key issues that you have raised on your talk show tonight.
You know, here's the thing, from right from the beginning, and one of my great hopes for him the day he took office was that he wouldn't lose the campaign Obama, because I got to be honest, they ran a fantastic campaign that no attack went unanswered. They were on top of everything. They were offensive. They didn't take anything lying down, and I had hoped that as President Obama, he would bring that same kind of energy and that kind of in-your-face politic into the White House. And I got to be honest, I just haven't seen it.
I think over the first 2 years there were some incumbent tendencies, and I think the administration has learned from that and grown stronger from that. You know, there was a moment where he signed the TARP bill, not the TARP bill, the one after that, and said, I hate it. I'm holding my nose, but I'm signing it. I always thought that was a key turning point. You know, Washington was beginning to win. You know, it was running him rather than the president running Washington. You look at some of the approaches in the lame duck session. You look at what can happen now. I don't know if you all saw the speech today. It was an amazing speech on immigration, an issue that none of us are real optimistic about getting anything done on. But it was a powerful speech. That was candidate Obama again.
Yep.
And he'll become candidate Obama again. But you are so right. You know, the second people get elected, they start thinking, even though they run these brilliant insurgent campaigns, they start thinking like incumbents. And that's what the president has begun to move out of with the kill of Osama bin Laden. And we want him to keep going.
Here's my basic premise. You know, basically people like me, blue collar, white males, you know, 40s, we are looking for someone who is strong, is decisive, not somebody who's going to back down. And to be honest, the Democratic Party has not been that, which is why I think they've lost the blue collar white vote for some time now. That they don't, even if you're wrong, and George Bush was wrong most of the time, but he was decisive, and he was somebody who was going to stand his ground regardless. And I want that president, and I think Obama can be that guy.
I agree. I mean, but the president, and you know, I'm from Pennsylvania, grew up there, live there now. I mean, so I see it through the same angle lens as you all see it through. You know, I think the president can be that, but he's going to have to do two things. One, he's going to have to rise above some of the pettiness. You know, we call it transcending in campaign strategy. He did it in the Tucson speech. He did it when he gave his speech on race during the campaign. In some ways, he did it when he addressed the nation a week and a day ago, saying at my direction, .. you know, Osama bin Laden has been killed. You know, he transcended, got way up above politics. He's going to have to do that. And then he's going to have to fight for a few things that he really believes in. I mean, you know, the president can't be political. He has to rise above that word. And even though we're going into the crazy season of a campaign, he's got a lot of momentum behind him. By no means has he won this election, but he's got a lot of momentum behind him. I think to win, let alone to be a great president, he's going to have to play a lot of offense and take some chances and run an insurgent administration.
Absolutely. And pass things that are going to help people who are struggling right now and do for the working class what he said he was going to do as campaign Obama, which to me was the Employee Free Choice Act right from the start. You may disagree, but I think that would have been a step in the right direction for me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got to jump at the employment issue. I mean, you look at the numbers now. You know, they've changed it about four times since the Great Depression, the way we calculate unemployment. You know, 14 million people, 25 million underemployed,
yep.
You know, and 18% of people under 24 years of age. These are staggering numbers, particularly in states like Pennsylvania. They got to grow these jobs, and they've got to start getting the trajectory rewritten in terms of the debt. And they can't do it on the backs of the middle class, obviously. People that are lucky like me and have made some money better pay some more taxes. You know, we got to get a little common sense here, the same common sense that people have when they balance their checkbooks. And what drives us all crazy is Washington gets, you know, incredibly stupid when the processes of politics take over.
Yeah, I agree. Let me ask you this, going back to the killing of bin Laden. Are you surprised that the right has really, on one hand, they've gone, you know, half begrudgingly saying, you know, he did the right thing, but then really into a full attack mode of the stories and all the stuff that's come out around it?
Well, I would just adjust the assertion a little bit. I think it's a few people on the right. I think generally, even, you know, Vice President Cheney, not someone that we wouldn't call on the right, you know, said some nice things about the president. So did Condoleezza Rice. I mean, there's a begrudging respect. And if you talk to these folks privately, there's a lot more than begrudging respect. I mean, the president made a bold decision and, he got it right. I mean, he put it all on, you know, you name your color, and he won.
Because it could have turned into Operation Eagle Claw.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, the president, I'm not sure it worked very well in Afghanistan. He went through the same painstaking, methodical decision-making process, only to make a decision in Afghanistan that I don't quite get and that I think that they're going to pull back from. By the way, that's costing us a nice $2 billion a week.
Yep.
But in this case, the painstaking, you know, Harvard, you know, law, you know, really diligent, you know, he's the smartest person that I've dealt with in policy terms. You know, that ability as a leader, which has obviously grown better over the last 2.5 years, really came down to getting those details right. I mean, they had people opposing the mission, and they started reworking the mission based on those critiques. I mean, that's how you get a really strong result. So they you know, accolades all around.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When he was doing that, all we heard from the right was that he's dithering. That, you know, he can't make a decision. Being deliberate is now dithering, in their opinion.
You know, I saw it in the immigration speech today. He's got to come out with a new spring in his step.
I agree.
Is not gloating. In fact, you know, we could critique the administration for some of the misstatements they made coming out of the raid. You know, they just got a little ahead of their headlights in terms of what they knew, and that happens. It's unfortunate. They've corrected it. You know, I'm not talking about it, bragging, spiking the football, as the president said, but he's got to come out with a confidence and a swagger and a bold, you know, Reagan-esque, let's use Ronald Reagan, you know, something a little bit tough, you know, for the issues he believes in. I don't care if he's going into a campaign. The best way to win, the way to lose the campaign is to play politics and not make some bold decisions.
Or as your website says, playoffense.com, he needs to get out there and he needs to be the one setting the agenda, because I believe, and you may, as a strategist, may disagree, I believe that the Republicans whip your guys behind in politicking, in campaigning, in sloganeering, and these simple bumper sticker messaging that they do. I got to be honest, the right does a much better job of it. I don't think they govern as well, but I think they're much better at simplistic sloganeering.
Yeah. I mean, less nuance. I mean, it's simpler and easier to communicate. I think that's true, and I don't think the Democrats are good at it, and we tend to be fragmented and all over the place, and we make our arguments too complicated, even though we try and learn from mistakes in communications. I think that's all right. Look, if the president waits at the desk, you know, Truman used to have that sign that says the buck stops here. If he waits at his desk for the hardest problems to come into that inbox, you know, he's going to spend, you know, like Stephen Covey, 80% of his time on those critical issues that have, like, no win answers, and, you know, he'll get bogged down. And a lot of that happened over the first 2 years. Instead, he's got to go out and control the other 20% that is really important strategically. And, you know, and that's what he did with the Bin Laden raid. You know, he's got to do that on the economy.
Yep.
He's got to go out and, as you just said, control the agenda.
And I think the first thing I would do if I were him is I would get a T-shirt made up with Obamacare written right across it.
How about the economy? How about the recovery starts here? Instead of Truman's saying, you know, the buck stops here, the economy, the economic recovery starts here. That ought to be on his desk. And that ought to be how he goes out proactively, controlling the agenda, rising above politics. You know, there's a deal to be made here, you know, and the Democrats won't get everything they want. But the Republicans won't get everything they want, and you see that they pulled back pretty dramatically from the Ryan plan.
Yep. They went home and they got beat up.
Yeah.
You know, they went home and got beat up. That was a rude awakening, I think, for them.
Correct.
Let me ask you this. And going forward with this, David Morey, we're seeing, I guess yesterday it was, Speaker Boehner came out and said, we're drawing this line in the sand, $2 trillion worth of cuts, no spending increases, no revenue increases. And that's our condition for raising the debt ceiling. How does the president deal with that?
Look, this is where I get, I'm a closet centrist. You know, I worked in government. I've done 12 campaigns around the world, and I find they're won, and the big decisions are made you know, I've been on a bunch of task forces. When you get into these decisions, the wisdom is the right answer is usually somewhere in the middle. I mean, there's many times we need to stick up for people that can't stick up for themselves. But generally, the answer is in a 50-50 place, you know, 45-55, somewhere there. You really look at what the Republicans are saying, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you know, I think the argument is forget raising taxes. Let's reform taxes. And let's do so particularly with people that make a lot of money, you know, over $250,000.
Well,
let's not make them villains, by the way. But let's reform the way taxes are paid.
I don't think anybody's making them villains. I think what's happened over the years is they've bought the right political operatives and they've gotten their loopholes.
Right. Right.
You know, Jan Schakowsky has a bill, and off the top of my head, I don't remember it, but it is talking about reforming the tax rates, going back almost halfway to the good socialist president Dwight Eisenhower when he had a 92% top rate. I think her top rate somewhere around 46% in this bill. I think that's a place to start before you're asking people to work longer to get to Social Security, before you're asking them to give up Medicare and all of the draconian, drastic things that the right keeps pushing. Maybe somewhere in the middle, as you've said, asking those who have to sacrifice it a little bit before you start taking from people who don't.
Correct. And look, the Democrats are going to have to cut probably more than they want to, and we're going to have to cut the Pentagon budget. You know, we're going to have to cut some things. But we're also going to have to raise some revenues, and we're going to have to make, you know, it's the lowest tax rate in, you know, 15 years. We haven't had tax reform in 25 years. You know, I mean, people that make over $100,000 are millionaires, you know, and I've been lucky in business. It doesn't make sense for me to pay low taxes. I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, people... And so, you know, I'm not quite sure, you know, what we're doing here by preserving the sort of, you know, the sort of fiction that we can make this thing, that this thing will go away, that we're not on some kind of trajectory that is anything but unsustainable. I mean, we just can't keep going the way we're going. If you repeal, let expire, let's put it this way, if you let expire the Bush tax cuts, you know, a lot of experts think 75% of the debt issue starts to get straightened out by year 10. And that's a gigantic amount of money.
Yep. And I agree. You know, at the end of this, it comes down to, you know, the shared sacrifice model.
Correct.
And I'm in favor of it.
Correct.
So last question I've got for you, you know, as we move down this road towards 2012, who do you like on the Republican side? Who do you think would give the president the most trouble? Who do you think the possibilities there are?
I don't think anyone that's probably going to get in the race, it looks like to me. I mean, I think the president will have a tough reelection fight. You know, the polls say today 57% approve of his foreign policy. In terms of bin Laden, I'm thinking of particularly, but 37% only approve of his economic handling. He's got issues and challenges there. I don't see anyone in the field, given the thoroughbred and remarkable talents of the president as a candidate, who can give him a run. But Chris Christie could be a challenge if he decides to jump in. I don't see him doing that. Someone that we're not looking at, I think Pawlenty is interesting. Huntsman is interesting. I don't think he could win the nomination. You know, but I don't think there's anyone who's broken out and really answered your question very well. I mean, right now it seems like an empty field. I assume that'll change and that field will get stronger.
I'm still hoping for Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum.
Yeah.
That's my dream ticket.
Yeah.
Because I love crazy.
Yeah.
David Morey, I appreciate your time. The book is The Underdog Advantage. I guess you can pick it up over at playoffense.com. Thanks so much, David.
Good to be back with Pennsylvania.
All right,
take care.
Love to have you back again.
Great, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by we, the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
If you were being hustled to buy an insurance policy, would you trust a salesman who said, "Let's go to the bar, have a couple of drinks, and talk it over"? As we say in Texas, never sign nothing by neon. Be careful then, because Representative Paul Ryan is coming at you, winking, blinking, and grinning, hoping to sell you on his Medicare privatization plan. Chair of the House Budget Committee, Ryan and all but four of his Republican colleagues voted to replace Medicare with this deal. The clincher in his sales pitch is that folks over 65, quote, would be enrolled in the same kind of health care program that we members of Congress get. Wow, you might think, Congress critters always give themselves the best, so where do I sign?
Think again. Step out of the neon and check the fine print, and you'll find that Ryan's plan is nothing but a political hustle. In other words, he and his Republican cohorts are lying. Note that he says we would get the same kind of coverage that they enjoy. That's like saying that someone with an old clunker has the same kind of transportation as a rich guy driving a new Cadillac. Both have cars. Here's the scam in Ryan's scheme. While the plan that Congress gives itself and the plan it wants you to buy are both based on the government paying a share of each individual's annual insurance premium, there's a huge gap between the share the government pays for them and the share it would pay for us. Members of Congress only pay about 25% of the cost of their insurance, but Ryan's plan would require elderly Americans to shell out nearly 70% of the cost of their insurance. And very few elderly folks get a fat congressional salary to help them buy insurance. This is Jim Hightower saying, the GOP's privatization hustle would cost each of us more than twice what we now pay under Medicare. Don't buy their lies, and don't sign on to Representative Ryan's raw deal.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. A little history for us. Back in this day in 2005, a federal bankruptcy judge permitted United Airlines to legally abandon its responsibility to all those folks, all those 120,000 working people who are covered by their pensions. Basically just with a stroke of a pen, all gone. And, you know, you look at this, and again, the folks, they got a little pension on the backs of the PBGC, which is about 40% of what they would have gotten under their pension had we made United Airlines honor their contracts. And what I love, and I'll be honest, what I absolutely love is that when the contract is enforceable against us, it's negotiable. But when we have a contract, to them, non-negotiable. You know, you look at the mortgage industry. How much of that was negotiable? I remember when we were looking to refinance our mortgage, and I called my mortgage company up and I said, hey, can we, the rates have come down a little bit. Can we work something out where you drop my rate down? No, we can't do that. But if it were the other way around, well, that's negotiable. Always negotiable, Jake. And you look at this, and it's an abomination that they stole the pensions of these 120,000 workers who paid into it. It was their money as well.
Well, I mean, we have a mutual friend who tells the story of you know, an employer in the state who literally shopped around for a federal judge. And that judge, again, vacated the responsibility of the corporation. It was a steel company. And they wound up with 40% of what they were entitled to after 30 years of working hard. Just amazes me.
But again, it goes back to this, the business interests in this country. Now look, I'm not anti-business. I want there to be profitable corporations, because if there are profitable corporations, there are profitable employees, people who can get a share of the labor that, of the wealth that they create through their labor. I'm all in favor of that. And I think, like Samuel Gompers said, it should be a crime for a corporation not to operate at a profit. So I'm not anti-business. What I'm anti is allowing them free rein. Allowing corporations this whole laissez-faire idea that corporations will police themselves and they'll always do what's in their best interest, and somehow that's going to trickle down to what's in the best interest of the community, which again, not happening. But these wealthy people, people like the Koch brothers, again, multi-billionaires with huge corporate special interests, have spent, and not even a lot of money, have spent some of their money influencing court races to put conservative judges on the bench. I shouldn't even say conservative, because it's not even that. Pro-business. Because I look at the court, the Supreme Court we've got now, they're more pro-business than they are conservative. They side with corporations more often than they side with anybody else, so they're pro-corporate more than anything. But the small amount of money that goes into to putting people on the federal bench, putting people on you know, the local court benches, which is why these local elections are so important, that you get people who are running for office who, oh, I don't know, aren't insane, who aren't in the back pockets of these corporate special interests. And you look at the little Koch brothers, and I go back to them because they're the ones front and center. They're the ones spending money like it's going out of style. And this story that came out of the Times in Florida, Tampa Bay Times in Florida, I can't fathom how this happens, and nobody is irate about it. And this is what the story, this is the story. A conservative billionaire who opposes government meddling in business has bought a rare commodity, the right to interfere in faculty hiring at a publicly funded university. Here's the, and this is the story. This is it down to the line. A foundation bankrolled by libertarian businessman Charles G. Koch has pledged $1.5 million for positions in Florida State University's economic department. In return, his representatives get to screen and sign off on any new hires for any new program promoting political economy and free enterprise. So what they're doing, and it's, you know, again, you got to give these business people credit. They're brilliant. For a couple of bucks, $1.5 million to the Koch brothers is like me reaching in and pulling out 50 cents for something. So they put this mere pittance down. And this university, who starved for funding because the state keeps cutting back, they agree to it. So what do you end up with? You end up with these professors, these pro-business minded free market professors who preach this theology. It's not even business anymore. It's this blind faith theology that free markets always work, and now you have affected a generation of students. I mean, think of the power in that. And for $1.5 million. And they do this across the country. I mean, there are... I'm really having a hard time with this. Because you look at how cheap our system has been bought. How cheap our education has been co-opted. And you look at these education tax credits that the Republicans here in this state want to hand out. Again, what it's about? It's about interjecting business principles into our education system. It's horrible. And it's destroying the fabric of this country. But I guess, you know, it's not that important.
Well, I guess my question is, first of all, the legislature, and then after I thought of it, Rick, you know, the legislature is terribly right now conservative in Florida, so they'd probably be in favor of it. But beyond that, leaders of universities, chancellors, you would think that any self-respecting chancellor would guard religiously the right to be independent, to educate children in a surrounding that isn't prejudiced, that is fair, and isn't unduly influenced by any one sector. You're giving up you're giving that up. You're selling, to a degree, in my eyes, to a degree you're selling your soul. That's terribly, terribly wrong. And where is there an outcry? I would hope so. Doesn't seem to be.
Well, you know, at the end of it, this is just one that got caught. I mean, you look at business, these big business schools across the country who are funded by these kind of foundations, the Koch brothers and all the money that they throw into it. And what bothers me even more than the education system is our political system. You look at John Boehner, gave his speech last night on Wall Street. This major economic speech where he's basically saying, hey, you know what? It's my way, the highway. We're not raising the debt ceiling. We're going to stick it to those Democrats, and they're going to cut spending on those programs that affect their constituents, and we're going to make sure that our people, like Pete Peterson and the Koch brothers, they're protected. And the only people that he shook hands with when he left were the Koch brothers and Pete Peterson. And you look at this and you go, at some point, when do the American people look at the Republican Party and some Democrats and say, you know what, I'm sorry, but you guys are bought and paid for pennies. And that's what bothers me. It's not even a lot of money. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, when you're talking about having a budget as large as ours, when you're talking about $20,000, $30,000 in donations, that's not a lot of money. I mean, for people like you and me, Jake, that's a lot of money to take out of pocket. When you're talking about somebody who's got billions and billions, it's not a lot of money, especially when the return on their investment is so great. It's just, it's frustrating stuff. Anyway, when I come back, I want to talk about the town of Brisbane in California. Again, another one of these beggar thy neighbor economic development ideas. Another one of these screw the local community before we get to the international global fight. Just, again, you know, beggar thy neighbor, basically what it is. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
At PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSECU.com/life. Get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012. The Rick Smith Show.
I'll tell you, that's the case. You deal with these equity firms, and man, that's basically the devil incarnate right there. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. This little town out in California, Brisbane, where this company, VWR International, they've been there for some time. They're major tax contributors to the local community, a major contributor to jobs in the local community. They have this massive medical supply distribution center there. What they're now doing, again, what a lot of these companies are doing now, they know that communities are struggling. They know that there's an opportunity to basically hold the community that they're in hostage and then wheel and deal all around the country and just even a couple miles away for a better deal for them. Now, for you, not so much. For the taxpayers, not at all. But again, you know, this company, one of these private equity firms, the Madison Dearborn partnership there, they're going to relocate. Why? Because the state of California is giving tax breaks. So as long as they move, they get this, you know, this big tax break. And it's going to cost this little town about $2.1 million a year and reduce the general budget there by 18%, which again means you're going to have higher property taxes, higher local taxes because this company up and left to get tax breaks somewhere else. Now understand this point. They're going to go somewhere else. And that somewhere else is not going to get the tax revenue. That tax revenue that they used to spend is going to be handed out to the investor class in the way of higher dividends, more profit for the top. So neither community is really winning out in this. In fact, both of them, I think, are worse off in the long run. You look at Brisbane, the loss of revenue means that they're going to lose their police force, 67% of that. They're going to lose 88% of their fire department. Most of their city services just decimated. Now this big company is going to move to this other city somewhere in California, this Visalia, California. Now that community is going to have to invest in better fire, better police, all the infrastructure that's going to go into this. And for what? Well, lower tax rates. And it's probably going to cost them money in the long run. So I look at this and I go, this is just plain dumb. We've got to be one of the only countries in the world dumb enough to pull this off. To say, oh, okay, yeah, we'll give you a bunch of money, sure. I look at American Greetings, where I lived in Cleveland. In the city of Brooklyn, American Greetings had been there for a number of years. The state of Ohio has given them $93.5 million to stay in Ohio. Now, they're looking to shake down the little cities in a 20-mile area for more. I mean, wasn't $93.5 million of state taxpayer money enough that you've got to shake down the little communities and try and get more out of them? At what point are we going to wake up and go, you know what, this beggar thy neighbor economic development isn't helping us. It's helping the companies. It's helping the investor class. It's not helping us. And that's what bugs me. The other part of this is the Chinese aren't doing this. They're not dumb. Not dumb at all. And you look at the big meeting that happened today with the U.S. and the Chinese. They had their little shindig. And basically, I can sum it up in one sentence. The big meeting was about this. The winners on the U.S. side are going to be mutual funds and investors. Those are the winners. And on the Chinese side, the Chinese. Because they get to continue their Buy Chinese initiative. They haven't done anything to change the currency. They haven't done anything to open up greater exposure to U.S. products, if there are any left, other than mutual funds and investments. Because you got to remember who's important in these trade deals. Every one of these trade deals opens up foreign investment, which means our rich people. Because we got to have our rich people get their opportunity. But yet, you want a manufacturing plant? We're going to give tax breaks to move away. And the Republicans are going to block it with every bit of their energy to try and take those tax breaks away. That is where we live. That is the policy that we allow to happen in our country. It's insane, Jake. Absolutely insane. But at the end of this, and where I've gone for some time, we need leadership from the top. We need congressmen who are going to look at this beggar thy neighbor economic development and say, you know what? We've got the ability to control this. We've got the Commerce Clause. We're going to stop companies like Carlisle Tire and Wheel from up and pulling stakes and moving to Tennessee for the biggest cash handout they can get. We're going to stop companies like Harley-Davidson from being lured away by areas like Kentucky. I forget the name of the town in Kentucky. You got to stop that. Because if we truly are in this global fight, this global competition, what sense does it make that we beat the crap out of each other before we get to the global fight? You know, and I've said before, you know, if Mike Tyson were walking down the row, down the aisle to the ring, and every person in the stands who could reach him could punch him in the face and he couldn't swing back, what do you think he'd do in the ring? Probably not an awful lot, because he'd be beaten and bloodied before he even got there. And that's what we are doing to ourselves when we allow the Chinese to continue this. I just love the language that they use. Indigenous innovation policies. Isn't that beautiful? Indigenous innovation policies. And we buy it. Why? Because what's really important. And what's really important is opening up those countries to our investors, to Wall Street, so that Wall Street can bring the wonders to places like China and places around the world, Korea, you know, South Korea, Mexico, the wonders that they've brought to us, an economy dependent on them. But I got to tell you, I think the Chinese are smart enough not to allow that to happen. Amazing, amazing stuff. So have you been following this boner threat? You got to understand, it's really about scorched earth. It is their scorched earth policy. And really, I look at Boehner and I go, you know, he's got the negotiating skills of my two-year-old. Basically, plug your ears, kick your feet, scream and cry, and demand things that never going to happen. This idea that we're going to cut $2 trillion in spending and not ask for any revenue enhancements, he thinks that's going to go through. He's got to get his head examined. And if Obama goes along with it, he's going to be sitting home from November 3rd, 2012.
He wants to be the Republican leader, Rick, and his base in Congress is pushing him for that. I think a lot of it's bluster. I do think there are some Republicans that would stop the government over that issue. I don't think he's one of them. I think at the end of the day, I think common sense and survival. Because if the Republicans do that, and they hurt this economy, they hurt this nation, I think sometimes the political parties, but especially Republicans, underestimate the intelligence of the American people. And if they do that, I think the voting public will hold them responsible. And I think it could be a bloodbath in 2012.
Anyway, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the working conditions in China. You know, there's this great story coming out. You remember when McCain said that, you know, there were things made in the U.S., you know, like the iPod and the iPhone, you know, those things made in the U.S., even though completely out of his mind and not happening. But you remember when he said it? We're going to take a look at where the iPhone and the iPod are actually made and the conditions under which these people work. And I ask you, when we talk about this, are you willing to compete on that level? Because that's what these kind of agreements that we're making with the Chinese are encouraging. When we're making trade agreements with the South Koreans, or we're making trade agreements with the Panamanians or the Colombians, when we're making these trade agreements, what we're really saying is there's an opportunity for us, our workers, to have to compete against what these folks put up with. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Chinese workers who are working in just really deplorable conditions, just so you can have the iPad and the iPhone. And sadly, we don't think that much about it. Quick break, right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, that's the question. What are we fighting for? What kind of a country do we want to have? You know, again, when I talk about things, I talk about the economy to me, because that's what's most important. If you can't put food on your table, if you can't make sure that you've got health care to help your family when you're sick, a roof over your head, the resources to be able to care for your family and put a little bit aside for a rainy day, for an emergency where you have some security, you cannot possibly be in the middle class, one, but also able to stand up and fight back. And what's happened, and the wealth class has figured this out, if they can keep us at the margins, if they can give us just enough credit that we get ourselves into trouble, if they can saddle us with big mortgages, they can saddle our children with huge student loan bills that they'll never be able to pay off. They're never going to question authority. They're never going to question what the corporations are saying. They're never going to question anything because they're on the treadmill and they can't get off because they've got a house note. They've got a student loan. They've got kids that, you know, get sick. They've got food that needs to be purchased. They've got all this stuff going on. There's no time for social involvement. There's no time for political engagement. There's no time to stand up and fight back. Which is why when the Tea Party thing happened, I was excited as all could be. Finally, there's an awakening in this country of people who are ticked off like I am. Ticked off at the fact that everything we were told, if we work hard and play by the rules, somehow we're going to be able to move forward. We're going to be okay. That we'll be able to support our families. We'll be able to move into a secure retirement. All of that stuff that they told us isn't true, and it isn't happening. So when the Tea Party thing happened, man, I was excited. There's some people angry like me. And then they took this bizarre rightward turn that somehow corporate special interests are the answer and somehow government is the problem and for-profit private interests, that's the answer. Multinational corporations who offshore their manufacturing and launder their profits through safe havens in the Cayman Islands. Somehow that's the answer. The benevolent corporation. How could we have missed it? That's the answer. And I look at what's going on in China. And we've talked about this company before, Foxconn. F-O-X-C-O-N-N. You can look it up on the internet. They are the people who make the Apple and HP products, the iPad, the iPhone, that come to this country. They work in a month 80 to 100 hours overtime. Overtime. That's 20 to 25 hours per week of overtime. They're forced to sign no suicide pacts. The fact of the reality is conditions are so bad. The quarters are so cramped. The working conditions are so grueling that they have a number of people who kill themselves to get out of it. So workers now have to sign these suicide pacts that bind their families into their employment contract. That if you commit suicide, we're going to come after your family when you're dead. Explain that to me, because I'm missing it. These are the people that we want to do business with. Their employees are regularly forced to stand 14 hours a day. Now, I don't know about you, but standing 14 hours a day, that's hard on your back. It's hard on your legs. And after a number of years, I don't know many people who can do it for that long. Their living conditions, they don't have homes to go to at the end of the day. They go to dormitories. And the people over at the National Labor Committee, Charles Kernighan and those folks, document the living conditions. And there are some photos over there, well, there are thousands of photos over there, of the living conditions of the workers in China, where you've got 10, 20 people in a room with bunk beds three high. Those are the people that they want to force us to compete against. This is the type of environment they want us to go back to. Because understand, we were kind of in this position at one point, over 100 years ago, back before we had the 20th century and all of the progressive reforms that have happened since. They want to take us back to the days of the robber barons, back to the feudal days, where we had our robber baron overlord, who understood that he could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. And what we've got now is we've got a Republican Party who wants to destroy all the safety nets, take it all away. The unemployment, the workers' comp, all of that wants to take it all away. So that when we're forced to compete, there'll be no safety net left for you. And you'll have to take, because you listen to the frame that they're using. Those are lazy workers. They're stupid. They're drunkards or they're drug addicts, because we got to have policies that make them take drug tests. And we need rules that make them submit what they've been doing. And you look at House Bill 916, Scott Perry's bill. This is another attack job. This is another one of those attacks on workers' rights. Oh, we need to tighten the requirements. What does tighten the requirement? What does that mean? That means excluding people who paid into the system. We need to require an active job search. What if there are no jobs out there? There are five people looking for every job. I don't know about you, but last time I was unemployed, you would send out resume after resume after resume after resume and never get a response. And all along the line, all down this whole thing that Scott Perry's trying to push, it's about cheating you out of something you paid for. And I'm stuck, and forgive me for saying it again, but I'm stuck on his press release. And you can look it up at Scott Perry's website, right in his press release. And he's very forthright, and I give him credit for being honest, but very forthright in saying this legislation was written with direct input from the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry and the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Not one mention of workers. Not one mention of workers' organizations. None of that. This bill was written by business. Because we've got to be business friendly. Much like the Colombians. Because what could be more business friendly than throwing union members out of planes? Or throwing those greedy workers out of planes? Or pulling them off a bus and shooting them in the head? It's not far down the road. You think I'm kidding? It's not far down the road. And it's frustrating, Jake, because I see this piece of legislation, and it is an absolute screw job to workers. And you look at what happened down in Florida. They passed their unemployment hit job, where they're now tying the number of weeks that you're eligible to the unemployment rate, which you never get 26 weeks again. The maximum now is 23 weeks down in Florida, and unemployment's got to be over 12% for that to happen. What they want, again, you go back, what they want is a permanent desperation class. And why do they want that? Because they want to pull all the wages down. They want to destroy that middle class working person who's living pretty well. They want to pull them down. Because they know if they can have enough desperate people at the bottom willing to take those lower paying jobs, you can pull all that down, which is why they want to destroy the public sector. Because those are the last jobs really that have pensions, that have health care. And again, I go back to this. Why do you look to somebody else and say, you don't deserve it or you shouldn't have it because I don't, instead of looking and going, well, you got it. Why can't I get it? That's what gets me, and I'm lost here.
Well, and here's a governor who supported this law who returned federal funds for high-speed rail at a time when you need jobs, in a time when it would be a great economic boon. It would have created thousands of jobs. It makes no sense. It just makes no sense. We are literally decades behind Europe and the developed countries in our infrastructure. It would have been a perfect opportunity. It would have been a win-win-win, creating jobs. You could have used it for economic development, and we could have dramatically improved our infrastructure. Now, the only thing you can conclude is that they, for purely political reasons, do not want the government involved at all. They don't want the federal. It makes no sense. I just shake my head. Why?
But here again, it comes back down to blind faith ideology. And you look at this governor who has decided that students are where we should be attacking. The future of the state are where we should be attacking. And now we understood, you know, and I said this right when the budget came out, if you've been listening, they're going to trade this off. The attacks are going to be after the folks who can't defend themselves. The poor, the elderly, the people without lobbyists. And they did that today. The Republicans came out again, and you knew they were going to. They resurrected the mythical welfare queen. They put out this image of that great Department of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse with the big giant pit of money being burnt. Even though no one can direct me to there, because I would shut it down. It's just not there. The low-lying fruit is gone. The tough decisions are a couple fold. And as our guest earlier, David Morey, said, look, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. I do agree. There may have to be some cuts. But not until you've exhausted your ability to raise revenue, which for me is quite simply taxing the drillers. It's our natural gas. We should be getting something, at least what Texas is getting, since our governor wants to compare us to Texas. And closing the laundering mechanism in our state via the Delaware loophole. Why we allow corporations to launder money out of the state is beyond me. Why we wouldn't want combined reporting and to make sure that we know what states, what money was produced here, what profits produced here, so we can adequately tax it, seems to me to be rational. But, you know, we've got irrational Republicans. We've got people who, because of their allegiance to these special interests. I mean, it's all I can think of. If you've got a better idea, I'd love to hear it. But this notion that we can just cut taxes, and it never phase us is ludicrous. And we are not the end of the road. This is what 30 years of going after massive tax cuts for the wealthy has done. It's put us in a deep hole, and it's put us in a position where we've got to now make really tough choices. And again, it takes us back to what Grover Norquist says. I want the government small enough that I can drag it in the bathtub and drown it. They wanted to starve the beast, and boy, have they done it. You got to give them credit. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to the Reverend Chuck Curry. Back after this.
defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 390 Blue Cross Blue Shield workers in the Buffalo, New York area are locked out of their jobs despite being willing to work. Today, hundreds of members of the Office of Professional Employees International Union, Local 212 in Buffalo, New York, are protesting the lockout by Health Now New York Incorporated, doing business as Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York. Dina Fox, business representative of OPEIU Local 212, says the company refused to agree on a fair contract as the union tried to negotiate more job security on April 25th.
Before we got out of bargaining on that night, our membership received robocalls from their employer telling them not to report for work. This is not a strike. This is a lockout. The workers did not come together and say, we don't want to work. The workers are saying, we want to work, and we want a fair collective bargaining agreement.
Fox says 164 positions have been lost at Buffalo's Blue Cross Blue Shield facility in the past 4 years. With jobs urgently needed across America, the union is trying to bring jobs back while the company insists on total outsourcing freedom. Fox says these workers are just middle-class Americans trying to provide for their families.
These are everyday, day-to-day folks trying to pay their bills, make a living, and make sure they can provide for their families.
May 13th is the soonest the company will talk with the union about settling a new contract. One aspect of the Affordable Health Care Act is drawing many more participants than expected. Jesse Russell reports.
After the Affordable Care Act was signed into law, the Health and Human Services Department estimated that in 2011, 1.2 million young adults would seek extended coverage under their parents' health plans. According to Kaiser Health News, the number of individuals under the age of 26 staying on their parents' plans will likely be much higher than the original estimate. Early numbers for this year show that United Healthcare, Blue Shield, Healthcare Services Corporation, Highmark, Kaiser Permanente, and WellPoint combined have all added more than 650,000 young adults to their roles. For WellPoint alone, the addition made up one-third of the insurer's growth during the first quarter of 2011. Adult children under the age of 26, no matter if they live at home or can be declared as dependents, must be allowed to stay on their parent health plans according to the law. If the young adult takes a job where their employer offers coverage, the parent's coverage can be waived. However, nearly 30% of those in their 20s are uninsured in the United States.
This newscast made possible by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State and Municipal Employees.
To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Well, I know that somewhere down inside they're just feeling small and scared. And they need to know that someone out there cares. Have you heard a Republican today? Have you tried to spread your love to those who love the NRA? Though they might be quite reluctant because they'll wonder if you're gay.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Well, the president today gave his big speech on immigration, and it has gotten really rave reviews. I think this would be another opportunity for this president to solidify some very positive movement forward and do things that, like healthcare reform, the presidents in the past have not been able to accomplish. At least that's my hope. That's why I've asked the Reverend Chuck Curry to come talk to us about the speech and what he sees as the answer to our immigration problems. Reverend Curry, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, for having me this evening. I'm glad to be able to join you all the way from Portland, Oregon, where the sun is still shining out tonight, believe it or not.
Yeah, I love Portland. Let me ask you, did you see the speech today?
I did. I thought the president did a great job. He went down to Texas, where this, of course, has been a very controversial issue, as it has been in a lot of border states, and talked about his strategy as he's been president for the last couple of years now, and and what our steps as a nation can be in the future. There's a lot of support for what the president has been proposing, which is comprehensive immigration reform. When you look at the poll numbers, there's something like three-quarters of Americans, 60% of even Republicans, want a comprehensive immigration reform that includes a path to citizenship. But politics has gotten in the way of that. You're right. Presidents have not been able to get this done. For more than a decade now, we've needed reform, and it hasn't happened. And I think this president has a chance to make it finally occur.
Yeah, because the way I look at this is, you know, the longer we let this go down the road without having some resolution, the more we end up with states like Arizona with their SB 1070 and other states. You know, here in Pennsylvania, we got a wacko who's trying to do a similar thing. You end up having a hodgepodge policy that really ends up, I think, putting immigrants in a not just a bad light, but also in an underground economy where they're easily exploited and abused.
Well, that's one of the really important factors about the president's proposals, is he's trying to bring people into the economy and to create jobs. The president's plan, if it were adopted over the next 10 years, would bring in about $1.5 trillion into our economy. And one of the ways that it would do that is would bring in these workers who right now are illegal into the economy and allow them, for example, to join unions and to gain worker protections that would increase their incomes. The other option, which you keep hearing thrown around, is that we should just, you know, kick all these folks out. Well, we're talking about 11 million people who are in the country right now. That would cost our country about $250 billion and drain about $2.5 trillion from our economy. So which would you rather do? You know, spend about $2.5 trillion or add $1.5 trillion to the economy and create good jobs in the process. And so there's a real clear path to go down, and the president has articulated that well, I think.
But I think it's clear to people like you and me, some of the people that I talk to who have this anger, this venom, however you want to put it, against immigrants, they don't want any part of it. This is our country, good white Christian country. We want those people out. And they love the big bus theory, where we can build a big enough bus to drive around and take all these people back.
You know, that's absolutely right. I mean, you certainly hear about that. This is a subject, by the way, that I preached about just 2 weeks ago here in Oregon at Salem's First Congregational United Church of Christ. That's the denomination that I'm a minister in. And as you know, Rick, most of the Christian churches in the United States, even the Southern Baptist, for goodness sake, the most conservative denomination we have in our country, have called for comprehensive immigration reform. But this is a big issue in our churches. And we hear what you're hearing. You know, for the most part, there's strong support for reform. You know, like you're seeing these polls that show, you know, around 70% or higher for reform. But you do hear this, this minority, this very vocal minority that is, some of them are very fearful, fearful that their jobs are going to be taken away. You see a lot of politicians, using this issue as one of those wedge issues, trying to divide people, based on economic status and certainly even based on racial, groupings, ethnic groupings, and that's a terrible travesty, but we see it every election year. We see, people scapegoated. And that has been a big issue in immigration reform and stopping it from moving forward in the past. So you've got that fear factor, you've got a racial factor that's been a problem as well. But I think we've finally gotten to the tipping point here. You know, when you start seeing polls reaching up into the 70-75% range, when you see 60% of Main Street Republicans saying that they want comprehensive reform with a path to citizenship, when you've got such strong support for the DREAM Act to make sure that kids aren't being deported from our country, I think now's the time to seize that moment. And so I was glad the president went down to Texas. That was the right place to do, to take this right down to Governor Perry and to other politicians who are playing politics with this issue.
No, I absolutely agree. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Reverend Chuck Curry. You know, Reverend, you know, I look at this, and for me, this has got to be a multifaceted reform. It just can't be our immigration laws in the U.S. It's got to be our trade policies. We've got to look at what's drawing folks from Mexico, from their home, here to the U.S. And I believe NAFTA was the worst thing that happened to the working people on both sides of the border. Now, you know, I'll admit the investor class of this country and in Mexico did very, very well. But for the working class, the people who you know, work for a living, they're the ones who suffered on both sides of the border.
Well, the United Church of Christ, many of our other denominations in the U.S. opposed NAFTA. There was obviously a lot of debate during that time. There continues to be about the fallout from these global trade agreements and who they help and who they don't. And so I think that's an ongoing debate. And I certainly agree with you that we need to continue to have that discussion. And yes, absolutely, immigration reform is part of a larger picture. We do need to do what we can to make sure that economies across the Americas are fair and that there's opportunities for growth so that people don't just come to the United States because it's the only place that they see opportunity. We want to make sure that Mexico, for example, is a place where people feel that they can have a future. But a lot of that's up to the Mexican people. It's not just up to our government, obviously, and I know you're not saying this, but it's not just up to our government to ensure that. The Mexican government has to take the lead of the Mexican people. But I know that there are good people in Mexico who are working on this issue just like there are here.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, what we've set up is we've set up a situation where you've got these large multinational corporations who have the power to destroy working conditions. And you look at the effects right after NAFTA was passed, you saw the entire farming industry in Mexico basically decimated because we were able to sell corn in Mexico cheaper than you could buy the seeds for there in Mexico, virtually wiping out their entire industry. That's the reason I bring up trade and I bring up those conditions, because if you've got a situation where you're destroying entire economies, entire industries, where are those people going to go? Obviously, they're going to come north.
Well, what we want to do is make sure that the people who are here now, those 11 million people who are here now, have some way to get in line behind those who've come here to the country legally already, and find a pathway to citizenship so that they can join the economy in a way that's legal and proper and respectful, and also have the opportunity to join unions and other organizations that protect their rights, increase their incomes, and in the process, of course, that increases the tax base and builds up our economy, and so there's only good that can come from all of this.
I agree, and what it's going to do is it's going to help raise the wages of the folks who are in the shadows, and that cannot be a bad thing.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Because at the end of this, the immigration reform, I think, and maybe you've got an opinion on it, any immigration reform has to come with, I believe, draconian repercussions for corporations who hire people who are bringing labor in here in an undocumented fashion, knowingly, without making sure that those folks go the proper route.
Well, that's an important point to bring up, and I'm glad that you have. The president already has dramatically increased criminal prosecution of employers who have been bringing in undocumented workers into the country, and that's absolutely right on his part, because these companies are exploiting people. I've gone to some of these camps where workers have kept, and the conditions are not unlike slave labor camps, to be honest, and with no worker protections whatsoever, sometimes not even sanitary water, lack of, you know, proper food or medicine. I'm glad that the Justice Department has moved as quickly as they did when the president took office to address that on the legal front. And the president's agenda on this issue, as he outlined today, has called for more of that, for more of those kind of legal strategies to help move us on that part of the picture.
speaking from a religious standpoint, you know, as you're looking at this issue, how do you call out to the right wing religious faction in the country and draw them in that this is really a Christian thing to do?
You know, from a Christian standpoint, of course, we talk about welcoming the stranger. We talk about seeing God in the eyes of those who are least among us. But let me tell you this, Rick, because I think it's incredibly important to note that this is one of those issues that has really transcended the American religious landscape. There are, as I mentioned, in terms of supporters of the president's plan, there are liberal Christians like myself. I'm a United Church of Christ minister. I'm a minister in the president's own denomination. I'm a pro-choice, pro-union minister from a denomination that has a long history of social justice work. And the president's plan has support from people like me, but it also has support from conservative evangelicals. Like Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention and other prominent officials, including the National Association of Evangelicals, because this is an issue where it's hard not to read your Bible and see a lot of clarity on this. It's why the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops played such an important role in so many of the protests that have been organized across our country in the last couple of years. And so churches that disagree with each other on issues like abortion or gay marriage have come together and in common ground and worked on this issue. And I think that's good for the country. I think that's good for our churches. And certainly it's good for immigrants who are in our country today.
I agree.
I think it's one of the reasons why the president's been able to move, quite frankly, on this issue.
So last question, you know, what should we do to help push this along? What should people in our listening area do to help this along?
You know, one of the first things people can do right now is go to whitehouse.gov, and there's a link there that you can watch the president's address and also sign up there to become a supporter of the plan. There's a tool packet there to get information about how to be in touch with your members of Congress. You know, the politics here are going to be tricky, as they always are. There are too many people in Washington today who have played politics with this. Too many people, and I hate to name names, but you know, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, are you out there listening, who were for comprehensive immigration reform before they were against it. And you know, those folks need to have pressure put on them and try and get them to come back to the right side of this issue. And so, you know, go to whitehouse.gov and become part of the effort to put pressure on Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform and build up our economy and build up the common good of our great country.
Reverend Chuck Curry, I appreciate your time. Keep the passion, keep the faith. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? We're back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
If you were being hustled to buy an insurance policy, would you trust a salesman who said, "Let's go to the bar, have a couple of drinks, and talk it over"? As we say in Texas, never sign nothing by neon. Be careful then, because Representative Paul Ryan is coming at you, winking, blinking, and grinning, hoping to sell you on his Medicare privatization plan. Chair of the House Budget Committee, Ryan and all but four of his Republican colleagues voted to replace Medicare with this deal. The clincher in his sales pitch is that folks over 65, quote, would be enrolled in the same kind of health care program that we members of Congress get. Wow, you might think, Congress critters always give themselves the best, so where do I sign? Think again. Step out of the neon and check the fine print, and you'll find that Ryan's plan is nothing but a political hustle. In other words, he and his Republican cohorts are lying. Note that he says we would get the same kind of coverage that they enjoy. That's like saying that someone with an old clunker has the same kind of transportation as a rich guy driving a new Cadillac. Both have cars. Here's the scam in Ryan's scheme. While the plan that Congress gives itself and the plan it wants you to buy are both based on the government paying a share of each individual's annual insurance premium, there's a huge gap between the share the government pays for them and the share it would pay for us. Members of Congress only pay about 25% of the cost of their insurance, but Ryan's plan would require elderly Americans to shell out nearly 70% of the cost of their insurance. And very few elderly folks get a fat congressional salary to help them buy insurance. This is Jim Hightower saying the GOP's privatization hustle would cost each of us more than twice what we now pay under Medicare. Don't buy their lies, and don't sign on to Representative Ryan's raw deal.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
You know, like I said, we're the jobs. You know, the Republicans ran on this. We're going to be the jobs party. We're going to be the paycheck party. Nothing. All we're seeing is the divisive stuff. And again, you know, you look at Texas and talking about immigration. You look at Texas, the House of Representatives late Monday night, they approved another one of these insane bills, now saying that cities and localities in the state of Texas that provide any sanctuary to illegal immigrants are going to be met with the justice of Texas. That I guess this is the reality of Texas now. If law enforcement stops somebody and doesn't ask if they're illegal, I guess now the local municipalities are going to be in trouble. And it's this whole idea that, you know, local governments, they turn a blind eye to these immigrants. And I'm going, wait a second. Am I missing something here? Walk with me for a second. In Florida, a pediatrician cannot ask a parent if they have a gun in the house and if the gun is secure. But in Texas, you have to ask a brown person if they're legal. In Florida, it's an invasion of your privacy. It's an absolute invasion. It's an intrusion to ask a pediatrician to ask a family if they have a gun and that if it's stored properly. But in Texas, it's not an intrusion to ask a brown person if they're legal. I mean, can someone explain that to me? Because I'm missing it.
I smell a court case in that one. I don't know how you can. I don't know how the state can get away with that. I mean, if you remember what happened in Arizona, the argument against strong laws similar to that was that they were going to, you know, they were going to target certain groups.
Where are your papers?
Well, no.
Show me your papers.
They were going to profile, and that's exactly what they're doing here in Texas.
I'm not against profiling to a degree. I mean, you know, there's some reality in having some sane, rational thought. But at the end of it, when you're stopping every brown person you see, are you legal? I got a problem with that.
That is profiling in the big picture. I understand what you're saying, but
this from a state that thought it was important to pass a bill to make cheating in fishing a felony. I mean, really, if you want to be taken serious, Texas, stop it.
Who is the knucklehead that brought
his name was Glenn Hager. He is a Republican from Katy, Texas. From Katy.
Only in America.
Well, you know, he says he's never altered the length of a fish. Okay.
Well, that ranks up there with Afghanistan and health care. And yeah. Good job.
But also, you know, again, you know, you look at all of this insane stuff coming out of Texas, and there's a lot of it. You know, they've got their abortion bill, much like they're trying to push through here in Pennsylvania. In Texas, you know, now they've got, it's going to be where if a woman goes to seek an abortion, she's going to have to get a sonogram 24 hours before the procedure. And the doctor's going to have to tell her what he sees. And she's going to have to sit there and listen through all that and all the preaching and all the stuff that goes along with it. Kind of interesting. Again, not creating any jobs, not actually lowering their budget deficits. In fact, I would think this would make the budget deficit worse because you're increasing the costs of the procedure, which I guess is part of the problem, part of their game plan. Also in insane land there in Texas, they've backed this loser pays bill. And again, it's the Koch brothers behind all of this who are funding this whole push. House Bill 274, which says if you, Jake Long, sue a major multinational corporation and you lose, you have to pay their legal fees. They could have a team of 1,000 lawyers. I mean, it's insanity.
It's just another way to limit their legal responsibility. Let's be honest. Limiting your right to sue.
But again, you know, it's taking your voice away. A lot of people, the only recourse they have is that lawsuit. Now, you think of a lot of the product liability suits that have come out. You think of a lot of the death suits. The last say anybody may ever have against the corporation is the ability for their family to get some damages after they've already been killed. Look, I'm against frivolous lawsuits like anybody. You know, there are some bad lawyers out there. There are some ambulance chasers out there. But at the end of the day, a lot of these things, that's the only way people get a voice. And by trying to limit that, what you're doing is you're limiting the ability of people to stand up for themselves. That is it in a nutshell. Did you see the story out of Wisconsin? If you remember, Scott Walker turned down a whole boatload of money for the high-speed rail. In fact, Ray LaHood on Monday announced some of the $2 billion in high-speed rail funding that had been rejected by the Florida governor be spent somewhere else. But now in Wisconsin, and this is really weird to me, Walker turned down the high-speed rail money. But he turns around and he asks for $150 million from the feds to do upgrades to their Amtrak rail. So I'm going, you know, I'm just kind of confused here. And, of course, the Fed said no. So that's the story, which I find kind of interesting. And I wonder how much of it is tit for tat. I wonder how much of it is, well, you know, you wouldn't do what we wanted, so na-na-na-na-na. I don't think so. But, you know, probably just another one of those things. And as State Representative Brett Halsey said, it's another lost opportunity that the state of Wisconsin had when he turned down all that money. And surprisingly, since today is my birthday, Representative Halsey wished me a happy birthday on my Facebook page.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
But did he send money? I guess not.
No. And in fact, you know, there's still time. If you want to wish me a happy birthday with a nice big present, I'm always willing to take that.
In any denomination.
In any denomination. because at the end of it, you know, not going there. I'm not getting any younger, and I'm not getting any wealthier either.
And well, never mind. I'm not going there either. I was going to say something, but not going to go there.
In fact, if Microsoft wanted to, they're buying Skype anyway. They could give me that for Christmas. Evidently, they're buying Skype for some $7 billion.
You mean that's not the reason they bought it?
I would be happy with it. Okay. I would absolutely be happy with it. Anyway, yep, today's my birthday. I am old, as my children tell me. My 8-year-old goes, "You're 44 years old? Wow, you're old." Leave it to an 8-year-old to put you right in your place and quickly. I love my kids. They're honest and they're from
the mouth of babes.
They're right to the point. Right to the point. Anyway, we're gonna take a quick break. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, our podcast is there for your entertainment and enjoyment. We're back after this. I told you, don't know why.
uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, what's going on today?
Oh, well, there's quite a bit. Let's start out with the president actually gave an immigration speech today. He gave it in El Paso, Texas. He said that El Paso had a third less crime than it used to. He said that the Republicans kept changing the bar, the goalpost. He said, do they want a moat, maybe with alligators in it? He said that basically 31% more drug interdictions at the border, 75% more on currency, 60% on weapons, that they had made the border much more or much less porous, but doubled the amount of agents that they had in 2004, now having actually, they have almost 20,000 agents.
Well, it's a step in the right direction, but at the end of the day, it's going to come down to what do we do with the, what are they going to do with the folks who are already here?
Well, you know, obviously he didn't refer directly that I remember to the DREAM Act, but he did talk about the fact that 25% of high-tech business were started by immigrants. They want to make it easier for the best and the brightest to stay here, and they want people who are here illegally to be able to pay taxes and have a fine and learn English, which is pretty much, and be subject to a background check, which is actually the George Bush plan.
Yeah. Just as long as we don't start with that guest worker thing where they start chipping people, I'm all right with that. What's going on with the budget?
Well, the budget, of course, yesterday evening, there was a huge talk with Speaker Boehner at the New York, and a lot of grief about that. It's interesting, the Republicans in the Senate presented their budget today. Then there was a lot of discussion about Social Security, and in fact, somebody from Social Security came out and said, well, you know, by law, you can't actually you can't borrow for Social Security. You have to take the amount that's given for Social Security, and then we'd have to reduce benefits. So to be able to say that we're borrowing for Social Security isn't quite accurate. I thought that was kind of interesting what they're doing about that. A lot of today the Vice President met with the Treasury Secretary Geithner and Jack Lew from Office of Management and the Budget with two Republicans and more, but headed up by Eric Cantor and Senator John Kyle. Then they also, the Democrats involved were Max Baucus of Montana and Chris Van Hollen from Maryland from the House. And this is that series of meetings. They said that there are some areas that they're making progress.
I don't see where you're going to make any progress whatsoever after Boehner has drawn the line in the sand and said, we want $2 trillion in cuts, and we're not even going to consider at any way, shape, or form any revenue enhancements, any tax increases whatsoever. I don't know how you can negotiate from that kind of a dug-in position.
Well, it's almost impossible, and I think my guess is during the next congressional recess, they're going to get a little bit of what they got on health care and Medicare at these town halls, a little bit of their own medicine.
you know, when Boehner went to, and did his little speech there in New York, interesting picture was, you know, circulating of him shaking hands with Pete Peterson, who was sitting right next to the Koch brothers. And evidently the story is the Koch brothers were one of the few people that Boehner shook hands with as he exited the stage, setting up for me what I think this president has to do, and that is get the secret money from these secret groups out into the open.
Well, that's true, and you know the president has wanted to do that in terms of contracting, and he's been very, very clear about that. Well, it turns out that one of the people that believes that he should separate the contracting from this process is actually Steny Hoyer. It's really quite shocking. Steny Hoyer took an opposite position to the president, and I don't know why that is, whether it's contractors in Maryland. Maryland is a very heavy defense state, but the defense, various defense industries, of course, took the Boehner position on that, and Hoyer took the position pretty much against the president on it.
I mean, you look at something like this, and it's hard to argue that there's any difference between the parties when it seems like you've got entrenched interests on both sides of the aisle.
Very much so, and entrenched money. Legal bribery, we call it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. What's going on with the Navy? Something they're allowing people to get married?
Well, that's right. It looks like the Navy chaplaincy has apparently approved officiating at same-sex marriages at Navy chapels, pending the full repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The White House, this was asked today at the White House, and they said, well, isn't the administration have to follow Defense of Marriage Act? Wouldn't that be a violation? And Jay Carney completely said, well, you have to ask the Defense Department, and did not answer the question.
No, I don't know how you answer that question, to be honest, either. To me, I think the whole Defense of Marriage Act is dumb to begin with. But here again, you know, you got a whole bunch of people who think that they need to have their lives mixed up in other people's lives. Like my grandfather always said, don't worry about me, worry about yourself.
Good. Your grandfather had it right.
Evidently, Osama bin Laden going to be interviewed?
Well, it looks like, yes. Again, this question came up today, not at the briefing, but the gaggle on the plane. And they are saying that they were asked about whether his wives are going to be allowed to be interviewed by our forces, by the United States, and all Carney would say is that they're optimistic that cooperation is going to continue. Wouldn't really say anything about whether the wives are going to be interviewed, but it looks like there's probably going to be some cooperation on that. And again, we're hearing different stories about how many wives were actually in the compound, whether it was one or three.
Well, I would hope there'd be three, because you're stuck in that compound for 5 years. You know, that's one wife is bad enough, but three beating him up, that would be better yet.
Ah.
I'm sorry, I had to say that. And lastly, I guess there's Apple and Google have an app for picking up DUI checkpoints. Is that true?
That's right. Apple and Google have an app. Research in Motion, which is the BlackBerry people, had an app, but they took it off. And now Chuck Schumer wants Google and Apple to report back to him, and they said they would in a month, about whether they should take off these apps or not. Now, some people say it's freedom of speech. Google and Apple shouldn't take off any apps. But, in fact, when Talk Radio News applied for our app, we had to wait 48 hours or whatever till they approved it. So if you're going to have all the DUI checkpoints lined up so that people can drink and drive, there's a question as to whether that should really be part of an app.
Yeah, good point. Ellen Ratner, I appreciate your time. Keep up the good work there. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. And now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight?
Republicans, apparently, Rick, have another budget proposal that has been put forth in the House. House Republican Appropriations Committee Chairman Bill Adolph from Delaware County has introduced budget proposal that reduces the cuts to education but maintains the spending level of Governor Tom Corbett's proposed $27.3 billion budget. The proposal calls for no tax increases and represents a 3% reduction from this year's budget. Under the plan, school districts would receive about $100 million more than the Corbett proposal for basic education. It also allots about $100 million for the accountability block grant programs that many school districts use to fund full-day kindergarten, preschool, and tutoring programs. It also directs $195 million more than Corbett's proposed for the 14 state universities and about $184 million for Penn State, Pitt, Temple, and Lincoln universities. It funds the money for these additional investments in education from the welfare department by eliminating unfilled positions and cutting the legislature's budget by $15.3 million. The House Appropriations Committee will consider the representatives' budget proposals on Wednesday and is expected to receive House action during the week of May 23rd. Some good things in that bill, Rick, funding for full-day kindergarten, for preschool, for tutoring programs. However, I'm not so sure I like the proposal, and we had talked about this, that ultimately that's where the Republicans would go, is to take money out of the welfare budget. And I
What it does is it resurrects that frame that there's these cheaters out there. And again, you know, if you know who these cheaters are, you turn them in. But the reality is there's not all of this waste, fraud, and abuse. And they use that during their press conference today. They use that phrase ad nauseum. Well, there's waste, fraud, and abuse. There's waste, fraud, and abuse. If it was there, why haven't you already done something about it?
Yes.
I mean, if you know it's there, go get it. You should have gotten it before. You've been there long enough. Fix the problem. Should have been years ago. But they keep talking about, oh, we've got all this waste, fraud, and abuse. Get out of here, you nitwits.
No. The truth is, and again, and we're repeating this for about the 10th time, but I believe that our listeners need to understand this. Most people in welfare are there for 2 years or less. A helping hand, it's needed. Are there some cheats? Yes, but then you get them off. This is purely raw political ideology.
And yeah, well, I keep hearing that they're cheating people out there. Yeah. They get caught. And they go to jail.
Absolutely.
That's the great thing about hearing about it, is that you know it. People are going to try and do it. And lo and behold, they get caught. I've always said, worry when you stop hearing about people cheating and not going to jail. Kind of like we hear on Wall Street. You know, when was the last time you heard of a CEO cheating? Oh, yeah, I haven't heard that in a while. Does it happen? You bet your sweet bippy it happens.
What amazes me, and this is getting into the bigger discussion in the country, the Republicans are big on going after welfare cheats when you're talking about people. You're talking about children, too, that are being taken care of.
I see. But after them.
In the amount of money we spend an infinite amount of money more for corporate welfare than we do for welfare.
See,
those are the welfare needy yeah. families and needy children.
Go get those corporate welfare cheats.
Moving on.
Their yachts and their martinis. How dare they?
Moving on. Saturday, for those of you who are interested, the letter carriers have their annual food drive. Saturday, May 14th, from their press release, and this doesn't take a rocket science to figure out. The need has dramatically increased by all reports. The increase just from last year is up about 30%. So if you want to do something about hunger, just leave a bag out there where the mailman can see it right around your mailbox, and he will pick it up. Tomorrow night, May 11th, Rick Bloomingdale, the head of the AFL-CIO, will be on PCN. It is a call-in show. It will be from 7 to 8, and he will be opposite a representative of the Pennsylvania Chamber of Commerce. So it'll be very interesting. They'll be talking about the budget. Please not only watch it, but call in. Our friends over at the Alliance of Retired Americans have some very interesting numbers that they've put out this week. New data is showing that Americans age 45 and above now count for about 119 million Americans, and they account for over 51% of the voting age population. This number has risen from 46% in 2000 and highlights an overall trend of an America that is getting older. The preliminary figures are based on the Census Bureau's 2009 population estimates, as well as the 2009 American Community Survey, which samples 3 million U.S. households. Broken down by subgroups, older boomers age 55 to 64 were the fastest growing group since 2000, jumping 43% to approximately 35 million. They were followed by seniors 85 and older, who increased 33% to more than 5.5 million, due largely to medical advances that have increased lifespan. Based on actual election turnout, which is higher for older Americans, census data shows that baby boomers and seniors age 45 and older represent 60% of voters in national races, judging by the 2008 presidential race. And this is astounding, nearly one out of two voters is 50 years or older. Now, what does that say about the Republicans' position on Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security? If I were the Republicans looking at those figures, I would definitely be worried. Under 55-year-olds, that you remember that plan that the Republicans came out with and said, well, you know, we want to really privatize Medicare, but don't worry, you guys. It only affects people 55 or older. Well, now they've come out with a report from Representative George Miller's office that it would cost those 55 and older, if the Republicans would have their way, it would cost about $182,000 more they would have to put in their IRAs to come up to the level of what you have now with Medicare. That's an awful lot of money for a senior. Sometimes we just talk about plans and say it's going to hurt. Well, those are actual numbers that they come and calculate with. That's an awful lot of money. Just another reason why the Republicans, I think, have really, really overreached. Some real good news coming out of Jersey, Rick. We talked about Comcast. We talked about how powerful their connections were, even to our former governor. Well, there has finally been a Comcast work site that has been unionized in New Jersey. IBEW Local 827 was the first union to really go after those people. And they voted on it, and they finally voted union. So that's a good sign. And I hope there's more Comcast employees that unionize. That's a big, big company. And good news. Back to you.
All righty, let's take a quick break. We'll come back to wrap this up. Desperate measures we explore, marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out, "We're not government!" Lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided, either they love us or they hate it. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have took into account that we never give up. We'll be here one day longer.
Radio experience where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The man who sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you start to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. You missed any portion of the program, that's the place to go to download our podcast there for your entertainment, enjoyment, and all free. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Big news coming out of D.C. today. Our good friend, Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, has introduced legislation to provide, that's right, Medicare for all type single-payer health care. Again, you know, this is where we have to go. This is the end. This is the end of this whole battle, to where we have health care for everybody that's cradle to grave, where there's an incentive to keep you healthy. That's the key in all this. You know, cost containment happens when you use less services, when you're not sick, when you're not dying. And maybe, and I've thought about this quite often, maybe if we had national health care, maybe if there was an incentive for we, the taxpayers, to make sure that everyone is healthy, maybe we would start looking at regulations a little differently. Maybe we would start looking at the drilling that's going on in this state a little differently. Maybe we'd look at pollution a little differently. Maybe we'd look at genetically modified foods a little differently. Because that contributes to our healthcare costs. As long as we can push it off on someone else, and as long as we can divert it over here and push it on to somebody down the road, there's no incentive right now to solve those problems. And understand, our healthcare system, and what the Republicans love telling you is, well, if you like your healthcare, you can keep it, and you should be able to keep it as long as, even into your retirement years. That's never going to happen. Because the insurance model is set up in such a way that they know when you get to be older, they're going to dump you off on the back of Medicare. They're going to dump you off on the back of the taxpayer. So that's why I think at the end of this whole path, it is a single-payer system run by we the people, part of the commons of this country, to make sure that every person has good quality, affordable health care. When they get sick, they see a doctor. When their kids fall and scrape their knee, they're able to see a doctor. They don't have to worry about going bankrupt if someone gets sick. To me, that's just the end of the road.
And I would bet, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't believe I am, you're not going to get near enough Democrats to co-sponsor that.
No. In fact, Jim McDermott, Democrat from Washington, he has filed a companion bill in the House. Again, you know, this whole idea of eliminating that middleman, getting rid of that insurance agent in the middle. You know, it always amazed me that we have to have this third payer in there, this third person involved, why we just can't have a system simply that pays the bills. We're not talking about taking over the doctors. We're not talking about the government doctor. No, we're talking about who pays the bill. And that was what was really lost in the whole discussion of health care. And that's where the right did a great job. You got to give them credit. They inflamed the uninformed. There was stuff in that bill that was easily manipulated into looking like, oh, death panels are coming. You know, when you got someone like Sarah Palin who has defined the debate on health care, we got a real problem in this country. When the simple-minded take you down a narrow path, well, there's death panels, without realizing we got death panels now. They're called insurance companies.
They used words like government run. You remember they were told to use government run.
Yep.
Socialized medicine. I mean, that isn't even, the irony is, you and I both know this, Medicare involves for-profits. Socialized medicine is a government, totally government-run healthcare program, and there's only three, by strict definition, there's only three countries in the world that have it. But yet, the right wing repeats it over and over and over again.
Even though Obama did everything he could do to keep the for-profit insurance companies afloat. Sad, sad news, our last story of the day. Sad, sad news. I know I'm sad. I'm just, you know, I'm broken up about it. Northwestern University, a very prestigious institution, this past year had a program. Again, this is one of those, you know, those mind-expanding type programs. It was a course on human sexuality, where this professor who was, you know, trying to maybe do things a little different, try to get some people interested in his class. I don't know. Not quite sure. But he invited, you know, some performers in to his class so that after the official class portion of the class where, you know, have the lecture and, you know, when the time is over, because you don't want to monopolize someone's time who doesn't want to be there. He brought in these folks who were willing to demonstrate the use of toys. These, or they call them in the adult industry, marital aids. And they're just a bunch of rubber things. And the female high point. I'm not sure if I can use the big O word, but the female high point. So about 100 students stayed to watch this demonstration, if you will, of these marital aids or toys, however you want to put them, and of course the coming attraction, I guess the end of it, the big O, I guess. So 100 kids stayed there, 100 adults, young professional academic collegiate types, and one of their mothers, which I would have loved to have been sitting next to someone's mother watching what basically you would have to pay big money to see in real life, as this woman on a stage and her male partner, you know, did all the things with a machine powered saw, with a phallic object on the end instead of a blade, kind of, you know, I honestly can't believe this happened in a college course, that you would bring in a reciprocating saw with a big phallic thing on the end. I just can't believe that. But anyway, the class has been canceled. So it's a sad day there at Northwestern University, because I'm sure this would have been a very popular class next semester. I'm certain of it.
I'm sure you're right.
Certain of it. Anyway, I want to thank all of our guests for being here tonight. Of course, our chief engineer for sliding the sliders and twisting the knobs. Twisting the knobs. I got it in my head. But thank you for being here. As always, you can download our podcast if you missed any portion of the show at thericksmithshow.com. All free and for your entertainment. If you want to email me, want to tell me what an idiot I am for bringing up the Northwestern story, I'm okay with that too, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We will be back tomorrow, and I'm expecting a big evening tomorrow, as we got Jim Byrne from the Pennsylvania Democratic Party stopping by, and our good friend Erwin Aronson going to talk a little bit about unemployment. Also, we'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great night.
Listening to the Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like a tide flood beneath the blurred sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray.
More people at $10 a piece.
and we'll be close to caught up. Well, not by tomorrow. We'd need another six, so 20 more people at $10 apiece, and we're on the right track. Thank you for all you do, all of you. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our recovering blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo, who, by the way, has a brand new column, the fourth installment of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy. If you're keeping up with this, and you should be, you will find, well, it's thought-provoking and